Jagmorit, Kayan Kadak, Nijabuja. We acknowledge Noongar people as the original custodians of this land, and I also invite you all to please bow your heads in prayer. Almighty God, we ask you to guide us in all of our discussions, to show goodness, honesty, understanding and wisdom in all that we undertake for the benefit of the city of Joondalup and of our residents. May we respect each other's views at all times, and we ask all of this in your name. Amen. Thank you. Please be seated. Declare this meeting open at 6:31 p.m. First item of business is declarations of interest. First of all, before I go on, there's quite an echo there from the audio. We're on to it. Thank you. First of all, I have a declaration from Councillor Fishwick for item 12.2, the execution of documents. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Fishwick is a member of the Sorrento Bowling Club. Further declaration from Director Parry for item 13.2.2, salary review of the CEO. It's an interest that may affect impartiality due to the nature of Director Parry's relationship with the CEO. Declaration of interest also from Director Parry for item 13.2.1, interest that may affect impartiality due to the nature of Director Parry's employment relationship with the CEO. Further declaration from the CEO, Mr. James Pearson, in relation to 13.2.2, salary review chief executive officer. It is a financial interest as Mr. Pearson is the CEO. And a further declaration also from Mr. Pearson for 13.2.1, CEO performance review process, also a financial interest as Mr. Pearson is the CEO. Further declaration from myself for item 12.10, tender 008824 bulk hard waste collection and processing services. A financial interest as I've done some work for companies that have submitted tenders for this work. The work that I've done does not relate to the City of Joondalup or to these tenders. Further declaration also from myself for item 12.7, list of payments made during the month of February, interest that may affect impartiality as I do some part-time work for Thompson Gear, but I do not work on City of Joondalup matters. Further declaration from myself for item 12.12, invitation to join panel of pre-qualified suppliers, provision of tree maintenance services. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as directors of Tree Amigos and Jeff's Tree Service are known to me. Also a declaration on the same item as an interest that may affect impartiality, as I'm a former employee of Jeff's Tree Service from 97 to 2006. A declaration from Councillor Hamilton Prime for item 13.1.4, the expansion and redevelopment of the Whitford Library and Whitford Senior Citizen Centre. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as the executive of the Whitford Senior Citizens Centre are known to Councillor Hamilton Prime. And a declaration from Councillor Vinciullo for item 13.1.4, expansion and redevelopment of the Whitford Library and Whitford Senior Citizen Centre. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Vinciullo is the president of the Joondalup Symphony Orchestra, which rehearses at the Whitford Senior Citizen Centre. Further declaration from Councillor Vinciullo for item 13.1.3. It's also an interest that may affect impartiality from Councillor Vinciullo due to his role as President of the Joondalup Symphony Orchestra. And similarly, a declaration for 16.2, notice of motion enforcement of e-writable rules from Councillor Christine Hamilton Prime. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Hamilton Prime owns an e-scooter and is an admin for the WA Scooter Enthusiasts Club. Are there any other declarations, councillors? Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, I have a declaration of interest for notice of motion one to do with increasing free parking in the CBD. My family owns and operates a business in the CBD, although we do not use the paid parking ourselves.
Thank you, Councillor Hutton. Any further declarations, councillors? If not, we proceed to public question time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public question time, and I'll ask that you follow my direction at all times. You'll have an opportunity to ask up to two questions. Your questions should be directed to myself and asked in a polite, respectful manner. And I'd also ask that you please state your name and address for the public record before asking your question. Now, as is our practice, we maintain a register outside, and so I'll commence there and call forward first Mr. Mike Moore.
Mike Moore, 31 Quarry Ramble, Edgewater. First question, Black Boy Park in Mullaloo. We haven't used the term Black Boy for grass trees for some 20 years now. So why hasn't the council changed the name of Black Boy Park?
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Director Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, there is a current project on foot at the moment where we are looking at renaming Black Boy Park. We had a meeting with an elders group last week as part of that, so it is in train. We are looking to rename Black Boy Park, as mentioned, which is consistent with an existing council resolution. At the same time, we are also looking at other parks or references throughout the city that may also be appropriate for renaming.
Thank you. Second question relates to the youth hub down at Percy Doyle Reserve. The youth hub isn't that well served by public transport, and there's a problem for kids on bikes and e-scooters and the like accessing that area. Both Warwick Road and also Marmion Road are 70-kilometre-an-hour roads. Neither of them have principal shared paths on them. Neither of them have comprehensive bike lanes on the roads. So how is the council proposing to provide safe access for those who make their own way to that youth hub?
Director Klassen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. From memory, I believe there is a bus route on Warwick Road and Marmion Avenue. I will check that. So there's a clear linkage to that. In terms of the other auxiliary infrastructure, that is something that we will consider into the future in terms of need and look at providing those where required.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Does anybody else wish to ask a question? If not, I declare public question time closed and we proceed to public statement time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public statement time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. If you're able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes, your statement should be directed to the Chair and also be polite and respectful. Also, please note that no question or discussion will occur at the end of your statement. And again, as per our meeting procedures, please state your name and address for the public record. As is the case for public question time, we also have a register for public statement time. We will get through all of the statements, which is good, but we will not have time for open statements, I suspect, or it's unlikely. I'll commence, first of all, with Member for Joondalup, Emily Hamilton.
Thank you. Emily Hamilton, 10 Ensign Way in Belden. Good evening. I appreciate the opportunity to make a contribution as the Joondalup Council considers the Heathridge Park community consultation process. As the local member for Joondalup for many years, I've been advocating for a major redevelopment of Heathridge Park. After understanding the need for upgrades from the groups that use the facilities, the grounds and the broader community. That's why in 2021, the WA Labor Government made a commitment of $2.5 million to get this project moving. My view has always been that we need to invest in a major redevelopment of Heathridge Park. We know that these facilities are amongst the oldest in Joondalup and have reached their end of asset life after 40 years. I'm disappointed that it's taken about 3 years to get to this point to consider public consultation. However, I'm very much looking forward to the next steps and a commitment from the City of Joondalup that this project will proceed. Not only is the site run down, it's no longer fit for purpose. It's no longer able to support our active and engaged community. We're seeing increased participation in our local sporting and community organisations and a growth of women participation in sport. Over the years, I've engaged with local residents and the user groups, whether at mobile offices, on the doors, on the phones, or at stakeholder meetings. And the message is clear that our community really does want to see a tangible and long-term investment in the facilities at Heathridge Park. The city has presented four options, and I'd like to expect that all four options will be open for public consultation and that our community is able to provide meaningful feedback through this process. I've already heard the need for additional courts for tennis, a second sports oval, women's change rooms and facilities, more parking, improved heating and bathroom facilities, dedicated and appropriate space for the Joondalup Veteran Support Centre and Heathridge Playgroup, space for young people and upgrades to the playground facilities, amongst other things. I'm very much looking forward to seeing a redeveloped Heathridge Park, a multi-generational facility that is truly fit for purpose. A location that meets the growing needs of Joondalup as Perth's second CBD, located in one of the fastest growing regions in Australia for generations to come.
Thank you, Ms. Hamilton. Mr. Gary Formaggio.
Good evening, councillors. My name is Gary Formaggio. I live on 7 Siren Road in Heathridge, directly opposite the Heathridge Park. I came here 2 weeks ago and gave some thoughts and some questions on the park, and I just wanted to make a statement firstly thanking you for that time. I ask that you, from my understanding, don't just offer option 3 for us to consult on as residents. But if you were to give us an option, I would push for option 1. Future-proof that park for the next generation. I've lived at the same property for 11 years. The playground is exactly the same as 11 years ago. There have been zero improvements. Not only will option 1 improve the park and the facilities, but it will improve the value of every house surrounding that park. It will make it multi-generational. My kids in 15 and 20 years' time will be able to play at that park. It will allow us to have more oval space. We use that park as a family nearly every night to play football. There is very little space, especially when the AFL teams are playing, for me to take my boys and my girls down there to have a kick. Having extra space on that oval will be very beneficial for everybody involved. Parking is another issue. You come down on a Saturday and every street around that park is backed up, backwards and forwards on either side. I've had people park on my verge, and I don't have a problem with that, but there is cars everywhere. So I would ask that, one, if you can give us residents an option, make it option 1 to consult on. But if you're not going to give us an option, open it up to all 4 options as residents so we can have our say on what will be the best benefit for the park and for us. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Formaggio. Samantha Vallet.
Good evening. I'm Samantha Vallet from 19 Meridian Drive in Mullaloo. Good evening, councillors, and thank you for your time. Tonight I'm representing the Ocean Ridge Tennis Club, situated at Heathridge Park. I would like to offer our support of the Heathridge Park redevelopment project as we acknowledge the need for new facilities for the footy and cricket teams as well as for the Heathridge Park club rooms. In offering our support, however, we would like it noted that our club fees requires a minimum of 10 courts, though with current growth, this would preferably be increased to 12. Our increase in membership has resulted from a renewed interest in tennis as well as the uptake of pickleball. Of our courts, 4 tennis courts are now being required for four tennis courts would now be required for pickleball, allowing us for 12 pickleball courts, which we require regardless of the Heathridge Park redevelopment. We request that this please be taken into consideration in the planning and detailed design, as none of the options meets the club's current minimum requirements. Currently, we have 10 courts and are turning away players from our community on Tuesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. We also request that if option 3 is the chosen option, whilst we have been working with the other sports and have agreed to give up 2 of our lower level courts for the footy clubhouse, we request that the path cutting across 2 courts be redirected around the tennis courts or directly from the other car park, rather than destroying 2 of our prime viewing courts. The other factor which I cannot see adequately addressed in any option is the increased requirement for parking. We are weekly being forced to park on the verges as all the car parks servicing footy and tennis are at capacity. The increase of membership across all sports utilising the Heathridge Park grounds is exciting, and it is wonderful to see that the citizens of the city of Joondalup are participating so fully in what the city has on offer. We would love to see the redevelopment take place, giving all sports the facilities they require. To this end, we are hoping we can please be a part of a close working group representing all sports and communities so we can find a solution suitable for all the users of the ground.
Thank you,
Ms.
Thank you. Phillip.
Thank you.
Sorry, my apologies. Roman Roker.
My name is Roman Rokita. I'm from 11 Scholar Plus Heathridge. I'm also a vice president of Whitford Senior Citizens Club. It's the oldest club in northern suburbs, over 50 years, and with a membership of around 1,000 members. You're about to vote on cancelling redevelopment of our club premises. In 2002, a similar decision was taken for the same reasons, that is, lack of funds. Building, according to the plans that we have, was then considered dilapidated. But we are aged well, and 22 years on, it's now only looking aged, but it is fully functional. This is according to the minutes. Admittedly, we had renovations last year of our bathroom and toilets, and now we no longer have cold water. We had cold water there for 37 years. With 1,000 members who pay rates, about $2,000 a year, we contribute between $1 million and $1.5 million to the council coffers annually. But we will survive this lack of maintenance and renovations. What we are worried about is this new policy of charging us for using our clubs. And the first casualty was that hairdresser that was located there for exclusive senior use. And he was open since 1986, and he closed down a week after he was given a new lease agreement with those leasing charges. So we will, smaller clubs of 10, 50, or maybe 100 members will close, but we will be there probably for another 4 or 5 years because we have a vouchers, we can subsidize our members. But we will lobby against those charges and we will monitor voting that council takes, or individual councillors, those who vote with or against our
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Rokita. Danielle Rees.
Danielle Rees, 11 4th Avenue, Burns Beach. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and councillors, for allowing me to speak today. I would like to make a public statement on behalf of the Burns Beach Residents Association to oppose the proposed childcare centre for lots 44 to 46 Grand Ocean Entrance in Burns Beach. The proposed location of the childcare centre adjacent to existing residential properties goes against the city's own local planning policy. The proposal also does not comply with other planning requirements, namely parking and access, building height, building design and hours of operation, amongst others. It is actually an incredibly busy traffic area, and just today there was an accident on one of the main roads that borders the childcare centre, which is going to be about 100 metres from the proposed childcare centre. The traffic assessment also neglected to address the impact on local feeder roads such as Backwater Circle and Fig Tree Lane. In addition, the inclusion of a coffee shop, restaurant, hole in the wall, is an attempt to bypass the retail component required for the planning approval and does not enhance the suburb due to its very limited operating hours. In assessing the proposal, Burns Beach Residents Association undertook some research and held a residents' meeting to engage with the community and obtain their thoughts on the proposed childcare centre, with an overwhelming number of residents opposing the idea. This is further evidenced by the relevant petition of electors of the city, which has been signed by 108 residents opposing the proposed childcare centre in Burns Beach and submitted to the City of Joondalup for consideration. In conclusion, we urge the City of Joondalup to reconsider the proposed development and explore alternative locations that are more suitable for a childcare facility. We believe that with careful consideration and consultation with the community, a solution can be found that meets the needs of both residents and future childcare users.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Rees. Mr. Michael.
Mike Moore, 31 Quarry Ramble, Edgewater, Heathridge Park. The city's population is expected to increase by approximately 20% between now and 2050. Heathridge and Belden are both HOAs, so the likely increase in population in those areas will be around 30%. The building that you're building is essentially based on what the needs are today, not on that increased population. The lifespan of the building should be 40 to 50 years. It should be built to cater for the needs of the community for the next 40 to 50 years, not for what is just adequate today. My opinion of the four options that have been put forward, none of them are being built for the future. They're all being built for now. Option three is a total waste of time. It does nothing to solve the existing problems that exist over there, and it certainly does not cater for the needs of the community for the next 40 years. There's also a question of whether you're catering for all of the needs of the community or whether you're just concentrating on the existing stakeholders. Surely you should be doing a needs analysis to see what other needs there are within the community and make sure that those are satisfied as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Ms. Michelle Kwok.
Michelle Kwok, 15, Cravelbell, Ocean Reef. Mayor, Councillor Skaya. The pre-feasibility assessment for an artificial surf reef has just been put out to tender. Malalu Beach was closed twice due to algal bloom this summer. The breakwater has changed the diffusion pattern of the Binup outfall. Brownish colour effluent discharging along the outfall pipes is clearly visible from multiple drone footages. The discharge, a brownish green discoloration around west and southwest of the marina, is brought to Malalu Beach by water movement along the southern breakwater. Satellite imaging showing clear blue water along our shoreline, but not around Ocean Reef Marina or Malalu Beach. Water users have been complaining of ear infections, skin rashes, burning throats, chemical taste in the mouth, and gastroenteritis. Community members have met with their local state member and relevant government departments to get to the bottom of these issues. In addition, the silt curtain has been dysfunctional and silt plumes were seen dispersing outside the breakwaters. A prudent decision is to delay the pre-feasibility assessment until water quality is back to normal and public confidence restored. The silt might smother certain parts of the seabed and these areas might be viable for an artificial surf reef. The assessment of the suitability for an artificial surf reef will not be accurate until marine landscaping works are completed in 2025 after sediments have settled and the completion of the Binup outfall upgraded. I hope the city will delay the tendering process and be mindful about spending our $50,000 to rush this through now when a better outcome can be obtained later. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kwok. That concludes public statement time. Next item of business is apologies and leave of absence. We have a full house for this evening, but are there any elected members requesting a leave of absence? If not, we proceed to confirmation of minutes. Do I have a mover that the minutes of the meeting of the ordinary council meeting of 26 March and the special council meeting of 2 April be confirmed as a true and correct record? Moved, Councillor Kingston, seconded, Councillor Jones. Any questions or comments on the minutes? If not, I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes ideally on the screens before you. Thank you. On the screens. Declare the voting closed and those items are carried. Next is announcements by the presiding member without discussion. The city's 2024 Anzac Day Dawn Service is hosted in conjunction with the Joondalup City RSL sub-branch and will be held this Thursday, the 25th of April, at the Joondalup War Memorial in Central Park. As well as honouring the legendary feats of our Anzacs and their bravery and spirit on the shores of Gallipoli, it is also a chance for attendees to acknowledge the brave men and women who have served and continue to serve, first of all, Australia and New Zealand in theatres of war and armed conflict, and others who have served amongst our allies. A wreath-laying ceremony will be part of the proceedings, and free tea, coffee and Anzac biscuits will be available at the conclusion of the service, courtesy of the city, and attendees are asked to arrive no later than 5:45 a.m. The Ocean Reef Sea Sports Club is also expected to attract perhaps its biggest crowd ever, which will be the final dawn service held there on the top of the cliff before the memorial is taken down temporarily for the marina works to be replaced to a new site at the marina, and this service will also commence at 5:45 a.m. In regards to the Joondalup Festival of Motoring, there is less than 2 weeks to go until it hits the streets of Joondalup City Centre on the weekend of May the 4th and May the 5th. The Joondalup Festival of Motoring blends the thrill of motorsport with entertainment, activations and gourmet delights, with thousands of attendees expected to descend on Joondalup to celebrate all things motoring. For more information, please visit Joondalup Festival of Motoring or follow the Joondalup Festival of Motoring on Facebook, Instagram and TikTok. Finally, I wish to acknowledge tonight two past elected members who are in attendance, and we are honoured to have two of our former councillors, both of whom chose not to seek re-election at the 2023 local government elections. I'd like to take an opportunity to formally congratulate and pay tribute to both of these individuals who have contributed a combined total of 25 years of service to the Joondalup Council and the Joondalup community. Tom McLean represented the North Ward for 17 years, his longevity reflecting well on how highly respected he is, and I think he still holds the vote for the record vote for one of those re-elections. Tom served as a deputy mayor and played a pivotal role in advocating for the construction of the immensely popular Burns Beach to Mindari Shared Coastal Path, as well as the development of Joondalup CBD and coastal suburbs such as Iluka and Burns Beach in particular, which was in its earliest stages when Councillor McLean started and are now highly sought after and valued places to live. John Logan was a passionate and committed and loyal elected member who served 8 years as South East Ward Councillor, including 1 year as Deputy Mayor. Amongst John's achievements include the development of the Pennystone Park Community Sporting Facility in Greenwood, upgrades to lighting at Kingsley Oval, and spearheading the implementation of the Ride to Learn to Drive program, as well as a Veterans Employment Initiative and dementia program trials, and also a rollout of defibrillators across all of the city's facilities. On behalf of the council, the administration, and all of the residents and ratepayers of the city of Joondalup, tonight we thank you both for your hard work and dedication to the betterment of this community that we all share. And I'd like to invite you both forward and present you a plaque and acknowledgement if I can. The next item of business is identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. We have two confidential items, being the CEO performance review process, item 13.2.1, and 13.2.2, the confidential salary review for the CEO. I just wish to seek a bit of advice on another item, if you give me a second. Councillors, as you'll note, that there are confidential items for 12.10, 12.11 and 12.12. I note for 12.10, we've had an alternate foreshadowed. Just if there's plans to be discussion on that item that will implicate the confidential attachments, I'm proposing we do that behind closed doors. I'll just look to Councillor Neal if he is in agreement with that.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
So in that case, I propose a notice of motion that Council, in accordance with Clause 14.1 of the City's meeting procedures, suspends the operation of Clause 4.3, Order of Business, to enable consideration of item 12.10, Tender for Bulk Hard Waste Collection and Processing, item 13.2.1, Confidential CEO Performance Review Process, and item 13.2.2, Confidential Salary Review Chief Executive Officer, to be discussed after motions of which previous notice has been given. So moved. Do I have a seconder for that motion? Seconded, Councillor May. Thank you. Just for benefit of people in the gallery who may be staying later into the meeting, all this does is push those three items to the very back of the agenda so that if they came up earlier, then items you may be interested in, which is entirely possible, we don't have to ask you to leave, go behind closed doors for an extended period of time and then reopen. So we're moving those three which go behind closed doors to the end. I'll put that motion by a show of hands. Oh, sorry, and the procedural motion is on the screens before you. Please cast your vote. Excellent, thank you. Declare the voting closed and that item's carried unanimously. Next item of business is petitions. The City's in receipt of two petitions this evening, including a 31 petition, signature petition that has been received from residents of the City in relation to opposing the proposed pump track, jump track and basketball pad at Whitford's West Park, Kallaroo, and also 108 signature petitions received from residents of the City opposing the proposed childcare centre development proposal for lots 44 to 46 Grand Ocean Entrance in Burns Beach. Do I have a mover? Moved, Mr Deputy Mayor. Seconder, seconded Councillor Kingston, that we receive these petitions and refer them to the CEO for action. Thank you. Any comments on the petition? I'll put that motion then and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and that item is carried unanimously. Thank you all. We now proceed to the reports section of the agenda, councillors. As is my practice, I'll start with an elected member and work my way around the room. I'll start actually with Deputy Mayor and just work this way around and go from there. Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Confidential item 12.10, please. And I'm also, as Chair of the Major Projects and Finance Committee, I would be happy to extract all those items 13.1.1, 13.1.2, 13.1.3 and 13.1.4. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hutton.
I'd like to pull out 12.10 and 12.11, noting that some others might also be of the same persuasion.
Thank you. Noting 12.11, I'm not aware of any alternates flagged, but if we go into details on that in terms of the attachments, we'll have to go behind closed doors on that as well. Councillor Kingston?
I think most of the ones I want to speak on will be withdrawn by others, but just to clarify, that 13.2.2, which is the salary review, that will be withdrawn by yourself. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to clarify that you're pulling out 13.12, Heathridge Park.
Deputy Mayor's pulling that out, but I'll, I have another.
Right, thank you. Yes, thank you. None others.
Thank you. Councillor May?
They've already been withdrawn. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi?
13.1.4. I think that's been done already, sorry. 12.5 and 13.1.2.
Thank you. I will go to Councillor Fishwick on 12.5 first, but noting that you have an amendment for that.
Yes, that's fine.
He's flagged that. What was your last one there, 13.1.2? Which we have. Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime?
None, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Ventura?
None, thank you.
Councillor Chester? Thank you. Councillor O'Neill?
12.7, 12.9 and 12.1.0.
Yeah. 12.7, 12.9 and 12.1. 12.10. Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you. Councillor Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As you indicated, 12.5. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Raftis.
All taken care of. Thank you. None for me.
Thank you. And, yeah, for my part, as was flagged, those reports from the committee that I chair, which is 13.2.1 and 13.2.2, both of which will be behind closed doors later in the evening. We'll go, Mr. Deputy Mayor, if I can, the microphone. Thank you. Item 12.5, standardised meeting procedures, City of Joondalup submission. Councillor Fishwick, do you wish to move?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the alternate that's been circulated in the briefing pack and also an amendment to that was circulated this afternoon.
So you wish to move both incorporated into the one?
I am moving the ones I circulated.
Okay. Yes. In that case, I'll go to Councillor Pizzi. I'll go to someone else to second and you can move the amendment much easier. Do I have a seconder? I'm happy to... Councillor Hamilton Prime. Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe that the City of Joondalup should advocate for an extension to the time governing the submission of notices of motion by elected members. I propose that the submission period to be at least 7 or more business days. This initiative seeks to ensure that local governments across all of WA adopt the standardised and prudent approach to promoting comprehensive decision-making. My alternate also transcends the interests of Joondalup, but it underscores the need for the sector-wide perspective, fostering consistency and best practice across all local governments in WA. Currently, our protocol for calling for a report in a notice of motion, while very operational, is followed extremely well by current elected members, but it does, however, lack some robust framework for decision-making. Our protocol is not documented in a policy, and it certainly is not a clause in our current meeting procedures, local law. This deficiency by a future council could lead to ill-considered decisions with potential for legal, financial, community ramifications should a motion not call for a report and seeks to implement a course of action if adopted. An examination of other local governments reveals significant disparities in the time frame allotted for notices of motion submissions. For instance, the Town of Victoria Park, the City of Vinson, afford elected members a fraction of the proposed 7-day period, as does the Cities of Stirling and Perth. Such truncated timelines, I believe, jeopardises the thorough evaluation of motions, potentially exposing local governments to unnecessary risks. The proposed 7-day or more submission period aligns with established practices in some local governments, such as the City of Wanneroo. Also, WALGA's model procedures local law states that a notice of motion is to be submitted at least 7 clear working days before the meeting at which the motion is moved. This undoubtedly will prioritise informed decision-making by allowing for reporting and analysis by the administration. The implications of my proposed amendment extend beyond the administrative convenience. By ensuring that motions undergo the scrutiny, local governments can mitigate risks, enhance transparency, and uphold its accountability. An example, although not a notice of motion, let us not forget the time given to our administration with regard to our recent special council meeting. Our administration had only 7 days' notice, 4 of which were over Easter prior to that meeting, which was extremely inadequate for them to submit reports to be circulated with the agenda. In light of that and other considerations I've mentioned, the City of Joondalup should urge the Department of Local Government to endorse a submission for standardised 7 or more business days period for
for notices to be lodged prior to a council meeting. By supporting my alternate, the department can catalyse a positive change across the local government sector, promoting robust decision-making processes that serve in the best interests of West Australian communities. My alternate seeks to evaluate the standards of governance within the local government sector by advocating for an extended submission period for notice of motion, which aims to safeguard against hasty decisions and promote a culture of accountability and transparency. By also by forwarding our response on Tooalga, which will hopefully form part of its submission to the local government department and the minister, it takes cognizance of their own meeting procedures local law, so I feel that they would strongly support it. Finally, if supported, I trust that the Department of Local Government recognise the merits of our submission and endorse this crucial initiative for the benefit of all local governments in Western Australia. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Hamilton Pryor.
Reserve my right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll just in giving you the call, Councillor Pizzi, if you wish to move an amendment, you have to move it before you speak, so straight away. Councillor Pizzi.
Could I move an amendment as well, please?
Most definitely. The amendment you circulated earlier?
Yes, please.
Do you have a seconder? Seconder, Councillor Kingston. Councillor Pizzi.
This amendment simply asks that the council endorses the city to include in their submission to endorse that citizens, when they come up to ask a question or make a statement, don't have to give their whole address. There are many citizens who are concerned about negative behaviours from the community members, so they avoid coming to council meetings and speaking. I feel like if they did not have to give their address, we would get a more variety from our community of coming and speaking and feeling more comfortable to speak at council meetings if they didn't have to give their full address. That's why I've moved the motion and why I'd like it supported. I also want to ask a question on Councillor Fishwick's.
We'll deal with the amendments first,
yep.
And then I'll give you another opportunity to speak
and
ask that question then. Yep. Thank you. Councillor Kingston, a seconder?
Yes, just briefly. Look, I think it's a good amendment. It ties into, I think, some of the previous decisions of council recently to try and move away from our current practice, especially since the council meetings are moving towards being video recorded. And as Councillor Pizzi has suggested, and has been suggested in the past year as well, is that for people that are at risk, sometimes it's domestic violence concerns, sometimes it's adverse reactions from members of the community, other times it's employment concerns, depending if they're in a sensitive occupation. So I think making members of the public a little less identifiable is a reasonable direction for us to suggest in the submission. It seems to also be what is suggested, or at least implied directly in the submission. Sorry, in the consultation document from the department anyway. So I think it's good just to have that clarity.
Thank you. Councillor May?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm comfortable with the wording of the motion. This has been raised on a few occasions by members of the public over the last number of years. I'm supportive because, it says, before asking a question, I would be a bit more on the apprehensive if it was in relation to statement time, and the sole reason being that given the city is broadcasting questions and statements, or currently have the audio broadcasting or be video broadcast, if someone were to make a defamatory comment, for example, we wouldn't have had, it would be harder to identify them if legal proceedings took place. However, if we're taking a statement from the floor and we don't have their details. But I'm comfortable with just providing name and suburb for questions. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Just a couple of very brief comments from myself. I don't know if council has noted in the AGM recently, where I have far more discretion in the rules that I apply. I did apply this as the rule, and the reason that I gave in the AGM was it is in the exposure draft that's been put forward by the department. And in fact, I'll read out under part two, subclause 6, public question time. A member of the public only needs to provide their name and suburb locality in brackets and not any other information before asking a question. So from the state government and department point of view, this is already written into the draft. I trialled it at the AGM and I'm supportive of the amendment because it's, I guess, essentially underscoring that part of the draft where the officer's recommendation was silent on it, didn't make any comment. Either way, I will take the opportunity and I take the points raised about people who address in public meetings. One of my reflections is we probably should look at the rules for elected members at some point as well. Every candidate has their residential address published in the paper, particularly state and federal, and as a councillor as well. And the problem I have with that, another member that pointed out to me, she was on her own, you know when the house is empty because you know when Parliament's sitting, or if you're a single parent, you know when the kids are home with babysitters. I actually think this could be extended to elected members, and I think there is more than enough trust in our electoral system to verify whether or not an elected member is a resident of the district or eligible. Simply saying that they are an ordinary resident of the district should be enough, and I think we're well past the point where we should publish elected member details, especially given that elected member absences from their houses are very well publicised. So, another reason I support the amendment's intent. Further comments? Councillor Hutton?
Just as a kind of general comment, obviously supporting the intent of the motion, one consideration I do have if we continue to move down this route is, I guess, the need for members of the public to actually make declarations of interest, which otherwise might be noticed through their address. And I just give that from anecdotal experience. I've been told of members making submissions from the floor where they do have quite clear conflicts of interest, and that is not provided to members. So again, I provide that kind of general commentary. Do support the move, but I'm conscious of potential knock-on consequences.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Pizzey, do you wish to close for the amendment?
Yes, please. Just to speak to the comments made, my understanding is that people, before they give a question or statement, give their full name, email and phone number contact. So the city has that available before they come up, so we can certainly get hold of them if they defame anybody. And just for the fact of they're giving their suburb location, so we can see if they have a conflict with something that's going on within that suburb. I don't feel like that's an issue for not giving their complete address, the number of their household. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put the amendment and ask you to cast your votes. Declare voting closed and the amendment is carried. We return to debate on the alternate motion as put forward. Comments or questions on this, Councillor Pizzey?
I just have a question to what a notice of motion is. That including amendments and changes to motions, or is it just a notice of a new motion put forward by Council?
Director Parry?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, thank you for the question, and I believe it refers to notices of motion which are put forward by elected members, not referring to amendments or alternates, because a report will have already been written. So in the main, there will be information to support or refute or to assist elected members in making their decisions. So primarily notices of motion put forward by a single elected member.
Further comments or questions? If not, Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. In terms of having reference to 7 days, I know we already have 7 days for notices of motion. I wouldn't think to extend it from my point of view. I think there's got to be a balance here and how long do we want. And similarly, we get very short notice on other items which come before us. So whether they be called late items, in which case we may only get, say, 3 days to consider them as part of a council meeting, or a
special council meeting where we've had one called for with one day's notice in the past. So I think if there's opportunities for such short notice, then imposing upon elected members to give more than seven is just not necessary or fair in that regard. So thank you.
Councillor Kingston.
Yes, thank you. It's just a question. The annual budget where we approve about $140 million each year, for the last 3 or 4 years, is it correct that that's been a late item? So about 3 or 4 days notice, not business days either, for regular day?
Dr. Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the annual budget for the last 2 years is an item that's proceeded directly to council. It's not a late item per se, but an item that proceeds directly to council. The decision on not having it go to the briefing session has to do with the timing of advertising the differential rate, which occurs in the month before, and the number of budget workshops that are held to inform elected members of what's in the budget.
Further comments? Councillor Fishwick, do you wish to close?
Oh, just very briefly, Mr. Mayor, my point is that whilst this council has 7 days, not all councils have that. Some councils have two. Some councils have three across this whole sector. My motion is aimed at not just Joondalup, but the whole local government sector. So I'm asking you to take a holistic view, not just look at our own front door or own back door, but what goes on for the whole sector. There has been an issue where, if you're talking about less than 7 days, that where an actual road was closed by a notice of motion, which probably wasn't a good thing to happen. So I'm thinking that unless we establish a policy or for the protocol to be framed in concrete or like in stone, then we need some direction for future councils where we all agree to the protocol around this chamber. But as time goes by and there's different people sitting in these seats, that might not be the case, and the actual notice of motion might be that a road be closed or something similar, which has ramifications legally and also on the community, that the administration hasn't had time to go out for stakeholder engagement or look at the legal issues with regards to a motion. So look at the whole sector, not just ours. That's what I'm seeking to do here, Mr. Mayor. And also, I mean, Wagga's own model local law has seven business days, which actually probably works out to be 9 days before a council meeting. So I ask you to support the motion as amended by Councillor Fizzy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. I will put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare voting closed and the item is carried. Next item is item 12.7, list of payments made for the month of February. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just briefly.
Sorry, do you wish to move?
I wish to move.
So, seconder for the motion, seconded Councillor Raftus. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. My apologies, Mr. Mayor. In regards to the list of payments that were made, I previously addressed this in the briefing session. For some of the list of the payments that were made during the month of February 24, some of the city responses still don't actually make sense to me. If I could really quickly go through, a few of these items have been outlined of a total, I think it was 112 items that I did wish to go through, but in the ease of obviously keeping things short and succinct this time. The first one I'd like to talk about was the Art House Gallery information. It was asked for more information in relation to the payment. The payment was for the purchase of a piece of artwork by John Siddon to add to the city's art collection. There was no further explanation given as to what this artwork is to be used for. Is it to be put in a rotational basis? Is it just going to be stored in a vault somewhere? Will the residents of the city get to appreciate this artwork, or is it just a piece of art that's been sitting, that's going to sit somewhere, not viewed by anyone? Into question three, the Australian Question six that was answered, the response for CMAC Technologies, $591 for the ladder hire. The response from the city was that it was CMAC Technologies covered the work carried out on CCTV camera located in the city centre. The cost also included ladder hire and labour costs. Whereas I note on that item, there's actually a labour cost below it. So I'm curious as to the $591.91 for the ladder and a further explanation in relation to that. Moving on to the city road sweepers, the answer the city gave was that the city also engages the services of an external contractor, EWCS, to undertake all sweeping, excluding the City of Joondalup Centre, for roads, pathways and car parks in the suburbs throughout the city. I don't believe that this question was answered adequately, being that the city has one road sweeper, and I would like further information in relation to that. The other one that I wanted to discuss, which is something that I'd like the city to answer in more depth publicly, is in relation to the EVE charges. It was asked in relation to the cost of these EV charges. The response from the city given was that these are 15-amp EV charge stations for an Australian plug, which allows electric vehicles to be charged via an upgraded Australian 15-amp wall socket. These are backup charges in case of network outages for the city's main charging stations. My question in relation to this is the charges seem high, and being that if the network is out, how is the city supposed to charge these vehicles? If the answer is that these vehicles are being charged at people's homes when they take these EV cars home, is the city upgrading these residents to 15-amp power plugs, being that a standard home in Australia has a standard 10-amp power plug, and I'm just wondering if that cost has been associated to people to get their homes upgraded, being that they work just for the City of Joondalup and they're already getting a vehicle, an EV vehicle in as part of their salary package or something. Is this an additional charge that the residents are paying to upgrade certain people's electrical outlets, being that a 15-amp plug has to be run back to a base? These are quite substantial works that have to be carried out if this is the case. So that's pretty much what I wanted to know about that one. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Director Humphrey, and there's a lot there. Take the recording and respond. Director?
It's interesting. If okay, I'll take those questions on notice and provide further information.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a couple of queries on a couple of payments, if I could please. On page 126, there was payments to Alinta, a couple of payments regarding Pinaroo Point Cafe Restaurant. Just wondering if we could get some clarification around those charges, considering the place has been up and running for a good period of time now.
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'll take the question on notice, but broadly speaking, the charges are incurred by the city as we're the title holder of the land. We would then pass those charges on to the lessee for them to pay, but I'll take on notice and provide details.
Councillor Raftus? Yes,
thank you. I would have thought for utilities they would be in a tenant's name, but will be clarified in time. Other items was around the page 130, Institute of Management, the AIM-WA PLP agreement. Is that an overall training agreement for the city, $35,000?
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I have to take that question on notice. I'm not familiar with the training programs myself. I know we do have a corporate membership with AIM that provides training to staff, but I'll take on notice and provide details.
Councillor?
Thank you. So the last one, page 146, ESRI, Australia Proprietary Limited Project Services.
for Enterprise GIS, $35,564.
Director?
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Again, I'll take the question on if you could take the opportunity to provide details. ESRI provide mapping solutions, so the GIS solution that you see on the CIS website and the offices use for mapping and aerial photography. ESRI is a company that provides that, but I'll take the question on so that I can provide specific details on what the payment's for.
Thank you. Thank you. Further comments or questions on item 12.7? Councillor O'Neill, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, to put it quite frankly, when I'm looking at things like $500 and something for a ladder for 4 hours, you know, damage to vehicles, which the city seems to be comping, and upgrades, what it seems to other people's PowerPoints in their homes, I don't believe that this is the thing that should not be coming through council first. These are delegated authorities. The authority rests as a delegated authority with the CEO. But we as councillors have the responsibility to question and query these things. I'm not satisfied with some of the
Councillor O'Neill, closing comments are an opportunity for you to address points raised by others. I note that Councillor Raftus only asked a handful of questions there. They're not a chance for you to introduce new matters. So I'd ask that you curtail your comments accordingly, please.
Fair enough. Yes, I won't say anything more to it. I just don't think that we've been given a reasonable explanation to some of these costs.
Thank you. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the item is carried. Next, we have item 12.8, the financial... Sorry, no, that's not correct. 12.9, card transactions for the month of February 2024. Councillor O'Neill. Do you wish to move?
Yes, I do, Mr.
Thank
Mayor.
You. Do I have a seconder? Seconder, Councillor Raftus. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just in relation to... 12.9, the only question I really had in relation to it was the response given by the city when queried about the two payments to Warners Group for the Family Tree magazine subscription. The two subscriptions for the Family Tree, the explanation was that they're held at the city's libraries, Joondalup Reference and Woodvale Library, Joondalup Reference Library and Woodvale Library. The differences in the amounts charged and the relates to the currency rates of the subscription is based on. I'm still questioning as to why we have two subscriptions. I'm not clear as to why there are both of those libraries, being that they're both within quite a close geographical location to each other. And is there some way that we can maybe delete one of those subscriptions to save the ratepayers some money?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I can take that question on notice and provide some more detail, but as you mentioned, Councillor O'Neill, the intent behind holding two subscriptions is to make them accessible in two different libraries, so someone that visits our Joondalup Library can access it, and equally someone that attends our Woodvale Libraries could access that subscription, but happy to investigate whether or not we could consolidate it and what the impacts of that would be.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus, a seconder.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a follow-up question previously raised around the fuel transactions and whether we are moving along the path of being able to consolidate the fuel into subtotals for each of the rego or plant ID numbers to give some greater clarity around the usage, please.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The current requirements is that we list each payment individually. So at this stage, we have provided the registration or plant number for each one of those fuel purchases. We would look at providing the ability to group via plant number or registration number through the elected members portal, and a dashboard within that portal that should be live probably in June, July this year.
Further comments? Closing comments, Councillor O'Neill?
Nothing further, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. declare voting closed, and the item is carried. I note that Councillor Hutton has, well, item 12.10 has been moved to the end of the agenda. Item 12.11 being the tender for green waste collection and processing, which Councillor Hutton has withdrawn. I'll very slowly note that we now have item 12.11 being tender 009-24, green waste collection and processing services. Councillor Hutton, do you wish to move?
Yeah, I wish to move the motion.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Happy to second. Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, just the, I guess a few general comments on this. Obviously, as someone who has received a lot of community feedback on bulk collections of any sort, I think it is good that the city has found an outcome that delivers good benefit for residents and also good outcomes. So, yeah, obviously there was discussion before around about the number of months. And I think, the Mayor, are you signalling that we need a seconder?
Director Klassen? Did you ask that question?
So, sorry, I'm the Deputy Mayor, seems to be signalling. I'm just...
Sorry, I just bring to your attention that Councillor Hutton referred to the bulk waste, but 12.11, the item we're on, is green waste. So just checking that we're...
Yeah, no. I think he said the 10.5 months, which is the rotating. Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, I'm referring to the bulk green waste. I'm sorry for the terminology. As I say, I think it's good that we found out a financial outcome that does it. Obviously, the question around the 10.5 month rotation, I know we had previous discussion around that. Personally, I think it would be good if that rotation was shortened so that we'd have a more substantial seasonal impact to different residents around about the 9-month mark. But I just make that as a kind of a general comment for future references. But yes, I think this is a proposal which the community, I guess this is a mechanism which the community does appreciate, and it's good that it's happened at a financially optimal level.
Thank you. Just as seconder and just to speak in support of the motion, and I know Councillor Chester, a point that you've raised many times, I think probably the biggest, I think our on-demand green waste system has worked very well. It has a phenomenal recycling rate and a very low contamination rate. The only issue has been the fact that it has been on a 12-month rotation, so its seasonality has stayed the same for all residents. On a 10.5-month rotation, we will each, you know, on an 8-year cycle, work our way through the year. So you know, it'll change every year by 1.5 months or by 6 weeks, and after 8 years, you'll be back to where you started. So I think for most households, if they're planning to do a big pruning, they'll know when it's coming for autumn or for spring, which tend to be more popular times. So I think this is well suited. Councillor Chester.
Oh, I'm happy to second the proposal.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, this is a fantastic thing that we've got here in relation to the bulk green waste collection services. Very happy with the 10.5-month rotational schedule. And I really am looking forward to seeing if further on down the track the city can maybe work out some way to notify, as I mentioned before, the residents when it's coming up to their thing, as people don't always remember these things, and it'd be a shame for people to miss those time frames. So maybe down the track the city can develop some sort of technology to help the residents remember when it's their time coming up, being that it will be rotational. But all in all, a fantastic thing, I think. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Councillor Hutton, do you wish to... Councillor Hamilton Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm completely supportive of this. I think what Councillor O'Neill could be alluding to would be a great solution using technology as an app. That would be great for residents to be able to be informed from an app. So I think there's many ways that we can engage more with our residents using the fantastic things of technology.
Thank you. Councillor Hutton, do you wish to close?
No further comments.
I'll put that motion and ask you all to cast your votes. Declare voting closed and the item is carried. Thank you. Item 13.1.1, Deputy Mayor, Project Philosophy and Key Parameters, Land Acquisition Strategy.
Yes, I move the recommendation before us. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Councillor Hamilton Prime. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't wish to speak on this other than to encourage elected members to support the recommendation before you. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Only to say I'm in complete support of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? I'll put that motion then and ask you to cast your votes. Declare voting closed and the item's carried. Thank you. 13.1.2 Heathridge Park Master Plan Project, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, I wish to move the recommendation before us. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Seconded to Councillor Jones, Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. So I'm recommending I wish to seek support of elected members to support the recommendation before us, although I do acknowledge that, Mr. Mayor, you have a proposed amendment for this item. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Jones?
Reserve my right.
Thank you. Councillors, I will move the amendment which I've asked in my name for this, which you have on the screens before you and was in the pack. Councillor Jones, are you happy to second? Thank you. Just in speaking to this very quickly, very supportive of the work that's been done on this, and I thank the Major Projects and Finance Committee for the work that they've done as well. I also want to acknowledge the work that the officers have done in consultation with the major sporting club users down there on the site. However, and as we've heard in the briefing session and again tonight, that engagement hasn't yet extended to the broad community, many of whom are passive users of this park, and they haven't been involved in the process, I think. And if I draw on my time here, probably the times where we've tripped ourselves up on other issues is at the consultation phase. And so I'm just, Council, imploring your support for this amendment, which is not preempting any of those outcomes, but the City's drawn up essentially some very good options, an option which refurbishes and has a replacement of Guy Daniels with a smaller club room or amalgamates into one major on the side and also an option to have an extra junior oval or not. I have some preliminary views on all of those, but tonight's probably not the chance for me to speak to them. Really, the point of my amendment is to say, let's put all of that out to the community. I, for one, will be very guided by the broad community feedback that we do receive on those options. I think it's important in particular to also include the oval as an option. The great thing about the way that these options have been put forward is the ratepayers who will be paying for it can clearly see what the cost implications are as well. So I like this one because on the one hand it's options, but it's also, hey, here's the impact from a resident point of view. Have residents informed on that and also form their views on what they think would be the best way forward, and that will strengthen us for the project going forward. As I said, the spare oval in particular, we have so few opportunities as a city to look at that. Even if it is supported at a community level in consultation, which I suspect that part of it in particular would be, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to deliver it in the first stage either, but it would be very helpful in the future when demand for winter sport ovals in particular continues to grow, when future council around this table will be able to say, well, we've had clear community support that there's an option here in Heathridge, if nothing else, or possibly with support of state and others to include in the first stage, which would be great as well. So I commend the amendment to the council and ask for your support to go out to consultation with all of the options and also to be open to other views, a couple of whom were expressed from the tennis club and local residents as well tonight. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I concur with your comments, but I'd also like to add that it's been waiting for so long for this project to come to fruition. I really think it's important we get it right. It's such a great facility that we need to meet all the stakeholders' demands.
Thank you. Further comments on the amendment? Not. Councillor Pizzi.
I'm just through comments through the community tonight. They're quite interested in option one, and I'm wondering if there's a reason why we're not providing option one as into community consultation as well.
Thank you for that question, because it's not clear from the motion. having option two with the option for an additional sports playing field is essentially one as well. So it's been worded that way because there's either a club room here or a club room there, and then there's an oval or not having an oval. So it was really distilling them down into discrete sections. So it is in there, albeit phrased in a different way. Thank you. Further questions or comments? If not, I'll put the amendment and ask you to cast your votes. Declare voting closed and the amendment carried. Thank you. We return to debate on the primary motion. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Just some short comments on this. Ever since I've been elected, I've been trying to push for this one to be, this project to be moved ahead. So I'm glad that something is, we're moving to the next stage on it, although it's taken some time to get to this point. I think it is worth touching on just a short commentary of some of these options, especially option one and two, which are more or less just a redevelopment option, and option three and four, which then were the refurbishment options. I know there has been some commentary that option one and two, so the redevelopment option, is better. Of course, however, is that if you actually look at the square meterage of the buildings, if you demolish the three and build the singular building, what is proposed is actually a building that's 30% or even over 30% smaller as far as its square meterage. So it's also amalgamating three large sport clubs into one building, into one shared club room. So there are significant concerns which do arise from that. Also, option one and two are based on the 2019-2020 social needs analysis. So out of that, there was mostly a consultation of the sporting clubs which use the oval, but as far as the other community groups, I would say out of that analysis, they were not prioritized as much. So the loss of that space is, in many cases, the space that relates to what those community groups use. That's sometimes the smaller community arts groups, the local orchestras, musicians, performing arts. So there are a number of elements, I think, of concern. I think also the history of this project needs to be acknowledged as well. So option one and two reflect very much the plans which originated in 2019 and 20, and they came from the 2014 project philosophy parameters. One of those was actually seeking commercialization of Heathridge Oval. So I obtained this under Freedom of Information a couple of years ago. One of the core reasons of why the Heathridge Centre was to be demolished and moved with a single consolidated building was to commercialise that site, seeing I have these documents under FOI. That actually was considered the area of land which would be most suitable if commercialisation was to occur.
Councillor Kingston,
I have these documents under FOI. I have emails.
I don't know what documents you're referring to. You're straying very close to adverse reflections and previous council decisions here.
I'm very strongly...
If you're talking about the last period for consultation, I'm sorry, whatever may have been workshopped in some internal document, that I can never recall that being the intention of a council that I've been a part of. So I very much caution you with that narrative.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Jacob. I'll take the caution. I'm happy to meet up with you at some time and show you the documents and show you the 2014 project philosophy parameters, which were a council decision to consider commercialization. So it was past the consideration that the council adopted. So out of that came the Heathridge Park plan, which later on, it hasn't, and as well the commercial element, as the Mayor rightly suggests, later on was not included in the designs which then went later to public consultation. So, as I said, I think it's worth acknowledging some of the history of how different parameters then guide what designs then get put in, even if those parameters are later then taken out. So, look, there's been a lack of maintenance of the current existing buildings. And as well, I think Mr. Moore, who spoke tonight, does make some quite positive observations, saying that there is a projected 20% increase in population, and we are just looking at the needs of today. And these designs were, as I said earlier, were based on a previous social needs analysis, which was from 5 years ago, at least options one and two. So, as I said, considering all these elements together, I think, and as well, that option one and two is a 30% reduction in the overall
square meterage provided to the community. I think those points just need to be cognizant in people's minds going forward in this. And I think lastly, yes, when I campaigned 2 years ago, I spoke to a number of the residents surrounding Heathridge Park, and look, many of them for a long time have been hoping there's been upgraded to local playgrounds, and I put that forward, and of course, with this project on foot, it was always suggested, well, those playgrounds would be upgraded when this project proceeds. So I hope that out of this process we can get a clear outcome so we can upgrade these things in line with the community's aspirations. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Chesser?
Yes, I have a question, if you'll allow. With respect to Mr. Moore's earlier comments, the question is, are the staff confident enough that the population predictions are up to date enough for us to make informed decisions?
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, acknowledging that population projections are just that, they're projections. Based on what we're seeing in those projections, yes, the facilities present at the Heathridge facility will be sufficient for the space that's available at Heathridge. What we need to be mindful of is that the number of facilities we provide will need to increase. As per previous briefings given to Council, there has been a very large increase in sport in the last 3 to 4 years, particularly female participation in both AFL and soccer, and that is having a profound impact on pressure for availability of ovals. So whilst the facilities will be sufficient for what can be played or undertaken at the Heathridge facility, it is likely we will need other facilities in the area to support the increase in demand.
Further comments, Councillor Vinciullo?
Yeah, I just want to make a brief comment. From a community perspective, I'd like to echo Councillor Kingston's concerns on a arts and cultural level. I think it needs to be factored. I hear a lot about sport and the sporting needs, which is fantastic, and I appreciate that and I identify with that. But the use of Heathridge over the journey, especially over the last 5 years, I know for a fact that community groups, especially in the arts and culture space, are using it. And I think it needs to be factored that there is a community outside of sport that needs to be factored when all this comes to fruition. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Rattus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of comments on this. Look, I understand the frustrations echoed by the tennis club on this matter. I think the issue of maintaining a minimum of 10 courts was an issue raised a number of years ago when this last came to us. And I note that's one of the matters that still remains an issue under the current concepts before us. Also note, speaking with one of the clubs who use the existing basketball building, comments was really supportive from my mind of a refurbishment of that building, that the building itself was quite solid, just needs updates to the toilets and I think the roof, which apparently it leaks quite a bit in winter. So I think it's good to have that feedback when considering these options, but yeah, in terms of trying to deal with the issues raised, I think the 10 tennis courts was a major issue previously, and I'm not sure we've actually covered it with the concepts we have in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? One very quickly from me. Thank all the councillors and for their comments. I think it's given a good understanding of the broad cross-section of people in the community who not only use but value this park space. There's two other uses for this park that I hope would be considered going forward. One that I've talked about on a number of occasions being the fact that this park proudly hosts the largest carols event in WA and what I think is probably the second largest carols event in Australia after Carols in the Domain. Some 20,000 residents come down and enjoy this facility every year with a fireworks show around Christmas time, a great family tradition for many in our city. And I think under all these options, hopefully that will be well supported into the future. The other very important one, noting Thursday's Anzac Day, was mentioned briefly from the community, is that the city has proudly hosted the Veterans Support Centre in Heathridge at that facility. and just acknowledging the work that they do, and I would hope the community in their comments and feedback support the ongoing provision of that service, thank them for it, and I think it's clearly one that we can cater for well and one that we as a council should keep in mind going forward as well. Thank you, councillors. Mr. Deputy Mayor, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do wish to ask a question, if I may, to the director. What is the expected population growth of the city of Joondalup up until 2050? Thank you.
Director Lee, I think that's...
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would have to take that question on notice to provide the specific population forecast. I do know that through some of the state planning frameworks, there's an expectation that we provide an additional 20 to 22,000 dwellings. But in terms of actual population, I would need to take that on notice and just come back to you.
Thank you, Director. I just thank everybody for their comments and would encourage elected members to support the amended motion before us. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put the motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the item carried. Thank you all. Item 13.1.3, Joondalup Performing Arts Centre, Project Philosophy and Parameters. Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the recommendation before us. Thank you.
Thank you. Seconded Councillor Vinciullo. Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you. It's good to see progress being made on the plans for the Joondalup Performing Arts Centre and another phase to look at this. So I appreciate the work of the city's officers in progressing this and adopting this philosophy, if it gets supported by council tonight, so that we can start seeing reports on a new proposal, including the location and the design of a suitable fit-for-purpose performing arts centre, which will be a great benefit to our burgeoning community performing arts clubs. So I encourage elected members to support this recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Ventura.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just going to echo the Deputy Mayor's comments and just take it a step further by saying that there is a rapidly growing community as well, and there's a community that needs to be serviced. It's an exciting time to be in the performing arts space in the city of Joondalup, and there are groups that are ready and active and excited about the prospect of something of this nature coming to fruition. So I highly encourage all to get behind this. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. From my understanding, to date, the state and federal governments have not put $1 towards a performing arts centre for the future in Joondalup. For that reason, I can't get excited about this. Until we get some state or federal support, I don't really support the Performing Arts Centre.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Raftus?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. God support us looking at this project. But as per previously raised, my concerns are we end up with another concept that costs a ridiculous sum of money that will never be built. So I would like to see one, hopefully, that when we bring something back, that when in terms of sustainability implications, that it's actually an affordable and deliverable project and not something that's just pretty to discuss. Thank you.
Further comments? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The performing arts is obviously something that is growing. It's a good idea, but I will state that I approach this with a cautious attitude. I'm excited to see where it goes from that, but I'm just wondering if there, further to Councillor Jones's comments, is there any state or federal funding that the city is interested in pursuing to help move this sort of thing along?
Mr. CEO, I think that one's going to you.
Thank you, Council, through you, presiding member. At an appropriate period, point in time, subject obviously to Council decision, then it may well be that the City looks to advocate for funding once there's enough specificity following a council decision around the proposal. I think it would be fair to say that as one of a number of features of Joondalup's continued growth as a strategic urban centre servicing the northern metropolitan area, the existence of a council intention directed towards the eventual establishment of a performing arts centre is a positive thing in the conversations that I and elected members have had with both state and federal government representatives.
Further comments? A question to the CEO, please.
Question, Councillor Jones.
Following on from your statement there, back in 2017, when we did have a $100 million project on the paper, on the table, we had no interest from the state or federal government then. So why would things change? Why? I'm just need some clarification there.
I might answer that. I mean, it was the council went out with two big things. That's when we got a $100+ million commitment to Ocean Reef Marina. So everything's timing and opportunity. We did easily get a commitment in that scale. 2017 election was when we got it, but yeah, not to the Performing Arts Centre at that time. Further comments, Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's a question to the director, if I may. What dollar value are we seeking to allocate towards the construction of this project? So is this greater than $50 million? Just so I can understand.
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we haven't actually advanced that far yet, Councillor. What we're doing at the moment is we're putting together the project philosophies and parameters so that we can assess three different sites. Once we have a site, it would then be appropriate, or the most appropriate site, we would then look to consult with councillors to what a project budget might be. But the site itself will dictate some of that and what can be included with it, whether we include residential development alongside it or otherwise. But at this stage, we really need these criteria so we can assess which of the three sites provides the greatest benefit.
Councillor?
Yes, following on that question again, I guess even if we're identifying through these three sites, do we have any understanding of what the cost of construction would be in some sort of ballpark? It's hard to say, well, we'll go ahead with these parameters, then not know. Do you see, I think the director gets the question.
Director Humphrey?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, so I do understand the question. At the end of the day, it'll be Council's decision as to what funds are allocated towards this, what we seek to achieve from the state government. The site selection is critical. If the site will determine what facilities will and won't work on the site, which will then also have a major impact on the budget. We would hope to have back before Council within 12 months a very preliminary concept that would give us the ability to give you a price estimate, and that would be a decision point for Council. What I would say is officers are very aware of the previous project and the scale of the budget that was clearly not acceptable to the community, and at this stage we are not intending coming back with a project of that scale.
Councillor?
I'll just make my comments. Look, I support moving towards having a performing arts centre, but I just feel at the moment we're putting the cart before the horse. I personally, as I've said many times previously in relation to this, I'd like to see us have a fuller understanding of a plan for the development of the CBD as a whole. To me, I think moving towards that and then slotting this in at a slightly later stage. So I would prefer to see those works done first. I'm also concerned about the current project philosophy and parameters as we have here, is that speaking to some of the state members, they feel for a building which, say, would be for community performing arts, that they wouldn't necessarily want to put state funding towards that because they feel they've already made election promises of that similar sort when they've paid for performing arts venues at high schools around the district. So there seems to be a bit of resistance there. And then when we move towards it being a professional performing arts venue, that's a venue which has a considerably larger budget attached, which engenders some of the problems which the previous project came to. Of course, it is possible maybe to have a mixed model between the two, but I'm always worried about with mixed models is that you don't really achieve the benefits either. If we are trying to use this project to activate the city centre, if we move then towards too much towards community performing arts, how does that sort of integrate with that other aspirations trying to be achieved on this? So I think overall we have a lack of facilities for community performing arts, and there does need to be an increase in provision, but whether this is the best way of solving that particular problem, I'm always a bit uncertain. So to me, this project parameters, I feel it's a little bit premature given the other glasses, as I said, with trying to lay out how the city centre is to be developed and how that will be incentivised with other co-located developments. So I feel that's a bit of a concern. And as I said about the performing arts elements too, I think, you know, these venues are risky. A lot of local governments don't get it correct. So I'm all for us just taking the fullness of time to get the right sort of outcome on this one. So I won't be supporting this, but as far as the general concept, I am supportive of it for a professional venue that could activate the city. I just feel at this time, with what's been presented so far, I can't support it.
Further comments? Councillor Fishwick.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, a question. To get the state or federal funding, would we need to then have some preliminary designs and cost estimates so we can say this is a concept that we'd like to pursue, whether it costs 20 million, 30 million, whatever it might be, then you then go for some federal funding or state funding? Would that be the case?
Mr. CEO.
Thank you, Councillor, through you, presiding member. It may not be a very satisfying response, but the best I can say at this stage is it depends. It depends on capturing the imagination of the potential funding institution, be it the federal government or the state government or both. It depends on the particular point in the electoral cycle and what are seen to be political and other opportunities in the northern suburbs for that particular federal or state administration. Yes, it will depend to some extent on how developed any council-endorsed plans are. But as we've seen, government commitments to funding can come sometimes quite late in the development of a project, or they can come very early in the development of a project. Sometimes a government, for example, might wish to take a position of stimulating, of kick-starting a project by, in effect, putting in a promise of seed money, for want of a better description, or it may be that in different circumstances a government at state or federal level might want to be assured that the thing is very likely to get over the line and that their contribution will make the difference between it falling over and it being built. So that's why the short answer is it depends, but the longer answer is the one I've given. I hope that's useful.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a short comment. We do, as a local government, spend an enormous amount on sporting activities, and I wholeheartedly support that. But what we don't do is look after the cultural and arts, and particularly theatre. And I have my wife has been walking the boards, and my daughter-in-law is a known actress around Perth. Also, we're tied up with ballet and dance, and also musicians, and I have sons who play in bands, and I used to as well. So those facilities are certainly beneficial for our community. Not everyone kicks a footy or goes swimming or plays cricket. What I think the problem maybe with some of the schools is the after-hours events, and we can look back and look at the situations we had with Sacred Heart, for instance, where the local community had issues with the noise and so forth of people coming when that wasn't part of the whole plan when it was put to us as a school concert hall. So therefore, something in a CBD is certainly beneficial, where people who need to rehearse and tread the boards or as an orchestra or a rock band, whatever it might be, can rehearse, and therefore when they put their show on during hours or even during the day, it's not affecting local residents. So I think we need to really look at what we do for the performing arts. I think it's a matter we really need to consider strongly, so I'll be supporting this recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm assuming I've got questions. Councillor Jones and then Councillor Vinciullo. Councillor Jones.
Again, given the previous design that we had that we had that in public, which was 100 million, was only for about a 1,000-seat auditorium. I'm reading between the lines that we're now looking at a smaller suggested performing arts centre. The previous one wasn't going to bring Pink or Coldplay, so what kind of seating are we looking at now, if we're only talking 50 million?
Director?
Mr. Mayor, I think it's important to remember that the last design wasn't just a theatre. There was a fair amount of the expense was on the form of the building itself, the architectural form, the display space for visual arts, as well as the theatre. As I've said, at this stage, there is no firmed up concept design. The purpose of Philosophies and Parameters is to guide staff in developing concept designs, and making decisions around such things as site and budget. So we haven't actually considered that in detail, but discussions amongst staff have indicated that 1,000 seats would be the minimum. We'd be looking at a theatre with a slightly larger capacity than that.
Councillor Ventura?
Yeah, I just want to provide a little bit more context and a little bit...
No, you can't. I thought you had a question.
No question.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be quite brief. I wasn't going to comment. While back in 2017, I wasn't supportive of the original $96 million plan, particularly given it was going to be solely the City of Joondalup up putting the bill, I think it's worth noting that I imagine if that plan was put out to tender today, it would probably come back closer to $130 million or so, given it's been 8 years since the original plan. So I think it's important that this motion be passed by council to allow some works to be progressing on this, because the longer you wait, the less bang for your buck you get with anything that is built. So and also we want to have some things in motion in time for the next one or two election cycles as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston, do you have a question?
Question, yes. Is there an upper limit on this budget? So is it going to be less than 100 million, less than 120 million? Or what is the upper limit that the administration is going to be considering?
I don't think that can be asked. I mean, we're not at the point, are we?
I would say that we are, considering we're scoping out different options.
Director.
Mr. Mayor, as per previous questions, until we have a site and a concept, it's very difficult for me to provide any guidance on what the budget would be. The process we're following at the moment is to establish what we want the facility to do first. Once we have that, we can then assess which of the three sites is most appropriate, and come back to council with a recommendation on an appropriate budget. But until we actually know, until we have instructions from council as to what the facility is to provide, it's very difficult to select a site or develop a concept.
Do you have a question, Councillor Ventura?
Yes. In the city at the moment, we hear a lot about the performing arts centres pertaining to schools. Can we just get clarification? Is there any performing arts centre in the city of Joondalup that exceeds 600 seats?
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, within the city's boundaries, no, I don't believe there's any facility that exceeds 600 seats.
Thank you.
Further comments? Question, Councillor Jones?
Final question, Mayor. Did Development WA show any interest in having a performing arts centre at the Oceanreef Marina site?
Not that I can recall, Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, no, there's not been any mention of a facility of this kind at Oceanreef Marina, principally because the site's already very constrained, and we're struggling to fit enough parking in for the facilities that are within it already.
Councillor Chester, did you? We've been going a while now. Have you commented, or is this?
No, I haven't commented yet.
Councillor Chester.
Okay. Look, I think we forget too easily what a bold and innovative design we had before us previously. We paid an architect for it. I would not like to see that just thrown out completely. I'm sure there are some elements in that we could take on board, but I do accept that it was considered by the, to some extent, the council, but more widely the community, that it was a bit too bold for our needs, certainly too expensive. But I guess it's also a question, are we going to go back and have a look at the original design and take on board some of those elements, which I think were very, very worthy of consideration?
Director Humphrey.
Yeah, through Mr. Mayor, yes, the officers will do a full review of the previous project. The number of elements that can be carried forward will ultimately depend on which site is selected of the three that are currently being considered. If the Tickle Court site is considered the most appropriate, there probably would be a lot of the elements that could be carried forward, and certainly the documents would be provided to any future architects that are engaged by the city. If one of the other two sites is selected, it's probably more difficult. A lot of those design considerations are site-specific.
Just a further comment, Yvonne.
You have the call, Councillor Chester.
Okay, thank you. Look, it's not just the performing arts, but we have a lot of visual art that the community, who paid for all this art through their rates, never really get to see. If they were put on display, I saw a similar comment made about the West Australian Art Gallery that got an enormous quantity of art, but it's never there for viewing. And I would like to, certainly like to see our art more accessible for residents.
Councillor Hamilton Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think, I know, since everyone's made their comments, I may as well jump in as well. I think it's important to progress this forward. I think a lot has changed since the last time we've significantly had a chance to do this. A lot has passed. I think now is the right time to push it forward. And I think by pushing it forward is when you attract the external funding that is so important for a project like this. I do say that I think, just touching on Councillor Chester's comments, I think, you know, yes, there is a point where you can be too bold, but I think sometimes you've got to be bold to get the funding. You've got to be bold to put yourselves out there. And that epitomises, in my opinion, what Joondalup has always been, a bold and innovative council and city. I think with that notion, we should also obviously touch on the arts, but also the more digital immersive arts we've seen progressively come through in the art scene, whether it was Van Gogh or many other things that have come through the our state art gallery. I think we should look forward to engaging that more innovative art technology and embrace it as we always have done as a city. So I would encourage my fellow councillors to support this. It is a dire need in our community to cater to performing arts and the arts community, and this is an important step forward to support those in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? I also had plan to speak, but there was one. I will very briefly make some comments, hopefully briefly. There was a comment made earlier in the piece in debate of an elected member hoping that this was to the effect of not just another pretty proposal to discuss, or not just pretty to discuss. Now, I hope that was a comment in the heat of the moment and not one that had been overly intended, because I did somewhat object to that, quite strongly object to that, because if I say one thing about City of Joondalup in my observation, we set out to do what we say we're going to set out to do. And if we get clear community feedback that they don't want us to proceed with something, we've changed course many times, and we're pretty clear about that. But we have always been a council in our 25 years of history that has not been afraid to back itself, not been afraid to put out ambitious plans, and quite frankly, we've delivered on them time and again. Some bigger than this, some smaller than this. And that sets us apart from the pack when you compare us to any of our comparators. And you know, you all know the projects. I don't need to run through them now. Obviously, Ocean Reef Marina is an outlier. Others like Sorrento Surf Club coming through now, dual-use path connection, CBD activation. All of the things that Joondalup has set out to do, it has achieved. We've got the mountain bikes now being delivered from the state government, often in partnership with others, often things that many have said we'd never get there on. And sometimes it takes us longer, but we do get there. In terms of delivering performing arts centres, I look at other communities, local governments around the state, some peri-urban, some regional, all with far lower populations and scale and track records of delivering bigger projects. Communities like Albany, Bunbury and Mandurah, with thriving performing arts. This is achievable, Joondalup Council. This is achievable for our community. There is community need for it. In fact, I would go so far as to say this is an inevitability for the Joondalup City Centre. A future Joondalup CBD will have a performing arts centre. The only two questions are when and how good a job are we going to do of it? When and how good a job are we going to do of the Performing Arts Centre are the only two real questions. When, I don't know the answer yet, but I tell you what, in terms of how good a job are we going to do, when I look back on my time here, when we've gone out and done the best job that we can, I've never regretted that. I'll just leave a quote which has always guided me, and I don't know who made it, somebody else's, I won't claim it. Make no small plans, for they have no power to stir the hearts of our community. I think we should be bold with this. Its time will come, and I don't think we should be shy about backing it. And a Joondalup Council will deliver this, probably in partnership with others, as we have on so many other ambitious projects in our past. Mr. Deputy Mayor, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do, Mr. Mayor. There's a lot of comments there. It might take me a little while, so forgive me. So the item before us is called Joondalup Performing Arts Centre Project, Philosophy and Parameters. It doesn't say, let's have another look at what we proposed in 2017 for over $100 million. It also doesn't say Joondalup Community Performing Arts Centre. So please be mindful of exactly what we're talking about here. We're certainly talking about a professional performing arts centre, and I'd encourage or I'd discourage all elected members from having discussions with state or federal members, giving them the impression that we're talking about a simple community performing arts centre. Clearly we're not. That's never been on the agenda. Certainly not before us now. As regards state and federal funding, the reason we haven't got any state or federal funding is because we haven't asked for it for this new design, this new concept, this new location. I would be quite confident that we would be quite successful getting state and federal funding, but there are some important factors we need. We need to have a good location. We need to have a good design, and we need to have a supportive council. If we have a council who's just questioning, not supportive of performing arts, not supportive of providing a facility that's worthy of the city, then it's not going to help. So I'd encourage you to get on board. We're not spending any money really significantly at the moment. We're just looking at what would a new concept look like. Forget all ideas about, you know, 7, 8 years ago. This is 2024. We're going to look at a new design right now. And with regard to our performing arts community, when I came to council 2.5 years ago, nobody was talking about our performing arts community, and I mean nobody. I'm incredibly excited about the rapid development we're seeing and the huge interest. There's lots of people coming on board and getting interested in building a, when I say a community performing arts, it's actually semi-professional performing arts. We're talking here about community groups becoming elite performing arts groups, whether they're professional, semi-professional, or they do it for the love of it. But I guarantee you, we're building a community that's going to be elite performing arts people, and we're going to provide a facility that they can access. It's not a community performing arts venue, it's a professional one, but I would definitely hope that our elite performing arts community will have access to it as well. With regard to the CBD, I never stop coming up with initiatives to suggest to the city regarding things we can do to activate our city CBD and promote it. And again, it may be there's been little success in the last 20 years, but I am very confident if we are supportive and confident and excited about what we can achieve together, there's a really good chance we can achieve something great, both for the CBD and for the Performing Arts Centre. So I'd encourage everybody, there's no reason to be negative at this stage. There's no reason to rule it out. You haven't seen a concept. You haven't seen a budget. Just be patient. Let's wait and see. And then I'm pretty confident we'll end up with something that we can be proud of and we can put forward to state and federal governments to seek funding assistance, which is very necessary. And also I would just comment, as many elected members will have seen from my approach on previous large projects, I'm not somebody who wants to flippantly spend money on Rolls-Royce solutions. I want value for money for our ratepayers. So let's just not worry about extravagance because I'll be looking at this project very closely. I want it to succeed. So I'd encourage you all to get behind actually what we were in front of us, which is not a community performing arts centre. It's not revisiting what we've done in the past. It's having a look now at these three locations with fit-for-purpose designs for 2024 and going forward to support professional performance in the city of Joondalup and also to support our rapidly developing elite performing arts community. So I'd encourage you to support the motion before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. It's clear, the voting closed and the motion is carried. Next item is 13.1.4, expansion and redevelopment of Whitford Library and Whitford Senior Citizen Centre. Mr Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mr Mayor. I'd like to move the recommendation before us. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Seconded Councillor Hamilton Prime. Mr Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mr Mayor. I don't wish to speak at length on this, but as you've seen from tonight and previous council meetings, we have a lot on our plate and the administration has a lot on our plate. And the recommendation before us is to not progress with this project at this particular time. So I'd encourage elected members to look at the big picture and look at what our priorities are and what we can physically get done in the short term and support the recommendation before us. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Reserve my right. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I remember a number of years ago meeting the members of the club when they were putting together a petition relating to this matter. I support the recommendation, not because I don't think the centre could do a redevelopment, but simply because, as Deputy Mayor alluded to, we are quite constrained in resources with a number of major projects underway. I'd like to see it done maybe in the next 10 to 15 years, ideally closer to 10 years, but there's a lot of opportunity here for the centre to really, the whole centre and the library to be redeveloped, and also at the same time look at incorporating Banks Park into that redevelopment and making that a more usable space as well. I drive past it several mornings a week on my way to the gym, and I was always really early in the morning at 7 o'clock there. See the ladies going there for their fitness class or whatever they do, or their arts and crafts classes, which they quite enjoy, especially when it's one of their birthdays. They definitely do deserve a redevelopment. It's definitely a worthwhile facility, and it's for those who haven't visited, I think it's got, it's one of the largest clubs in the city of Joondalup, if not the largest in terms of members. It provides a very important service for our local population, especially as our population is ageing as well. So, given I intend to live here for the rest of my life, hopefully when I reach that age, and some of my fellow councillors have reached that age, we'll be able to use a redeveloped facility. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. No, Councillor Fizzy.
Sorry, I'm just trying to read my writing now. So as we heard from the Vice President tonight of Whitford Senior Citizen Association, they have 1,000 citizens or residents that use their facility. They offer a service that the city does not need to conduct themselves. And we're talking about a group of people, you know, waiting 10 to 15 years to fix this place up. Look, you're talking about a group of people who have given to the city over many years of their lives, in rates and service. When we're talking about charging for venues through the venue hire fees charges policy, which was brought up by the Vice President tonight, I understand the city does give them a discount. But when we're charging for a facility, we need to make sure that that facility is up to spec and adequate space for those people. I don't agree to not progress with this redevelopment. Maybe the city can move forward with a redevelopment that can satisfy the users and the financial and building contract restraints that the city is concerned with. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was wondering if I could put forward a small amendment to this recommendation to put a point of time to revisit this, perhaps as part of the capital budget for 25-26.
I think I'd need wording. I mean,
yep.
I just have to say, I think if you were trying to put something in for 25-26, that could not be an amendment. That would have to be foreshadowed, because, I mean,
clearly we're probably past the point of any serious capital works for 24-25. So I think that would not be a revisiting of it. That would be contrary to the motion as it stands. So, I mean, if you pick a point in time, you know, to revisit it, maybe, I don't think you can do that as an amendment, is what I'm saying, Councillor Raftus.
I think where the recommendation refers to at this time, and we saw a similar thing with the Performing Arts Centre. It wasn't progressed at this time, but it was able to be rescheduled in for future discussion. So putting a date in it is just saying it's not going ahead at this time, but we will revisit it in a future period, in which case I don't see it as a substantial change. This is saying not ever. This is just saying at this time. So
I'm not arguing the substantive point, believe me. What I'm saying is if you link it to the capital budget in 25-26, I think it would change the intent of the motion. So if you say that, you know, not to progress redevelopment at this time, but that the committee review the proposal in 25-26, I don't think that would change the intent, but I think if you tried to link it to a capital consideration, I think that's essentially what's before.
Okay, I'm happy with the committee to revisit it in 25-26. Yep, so it's not tied to the budget.
Yep. So, that the major projects and finance committee review in 25-26. Yep. Seconded.
Yep.
Councillor Vinciullo. Yep. Thank you. Councillor Raftus, do you wish to speak to the amendment?
Certainly. Look, I think it's an important centre. It's got a very large population that attends this centre on a regular basis, and it covers those 1,000 members plus live across a range of suburbs and not just in the southwest ward, across into central and southern. So from my point of view, I think it's they perform an important service, and a lot of volunteers attend there and provide other services for the city in my view. So I think it's important that we look at it and not just put this on the back burner forever. This is also noted that there was particular reference we deferred consideration of this to deal with the study we were doing, but then the study didn't really take into account what we deal with in terms of senior citizen centres. So on a direct basis. So I feel that we sort of might be perceived as using a study and analysis that didn't really deal with it to defer consideration. So I would like to see that we actually are continuing to consider this. It's an important centre, and we'd hope that we can approve and support this minor amendment to keep this for future consideration by the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Raftus. Councillor Vinciullo?
Yeah, I'll just add to that. Councillor Raftus was just the same. This is just a timing issue. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when and just getting it right. So that's why I'm proudly seconding it.
Thank you for the comments on the amendment. Councillor Hamilton Prime first, Ward Councillor.
But thank you, Mr. Mayor. And just concurring Councillor Vinciullo's comments, I think there would be no one potentially across this table that would say they don't provide a valuable service. They do, absolutely. But I think the quirk of the location and the premises, I think that's been a long-standing issue. So to look at it in isolation in terms of what can be done may be a very potentially short-sighted point of view, and I would love to see them get a facility that's worthy of the amazing work they do in our community. And obviously the library is also equally important to our community, and I'd love to see it a facility fitting of that, I guess, connection with the community to be there in the future. And as Councillor Vinciullo said, it's not a issue of if, it's just when.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus, just have your microphone, if I may. Thank you. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. Question, if I may, just to the relevant director. Given that the recommendation of the officers was as the original motion, and given that the date has been put forward now, I'd just be interested in the views of the director as to when we're talking about at this time and potentially obviously looking at it again in the future, what's the director's view about the date that's proposed for us, 2025-26? Because I don't want to see us review it too quickly and get the same conclusion. Is that feasible that we might get a different conclusion in 2025-26, looking at the other projects we have? Thank you.
I'll take that in two parts, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I guess on the one hand, whether governance is comfortable that this is fine as an amendment, that it doesn't change the intent, and then I'll go to the relevant director for the project itself. So Director Parry first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yep, satisfied with the intent of the amendment.
Thank you. And in terms of the project, Director?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm quite comfortable to report again effectively in 2 years' time on this project. A lot can change in 2 years.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just firstly, I believe that our senior citizens are worthy of as much as we can actually give them at any time, and I was concerned that council was agreeing not to progress with it. However, with Councillor Raftus's amendment, I do believe that it doesn't put things on the back burner, and it actually gives a time frame which is probably most people will find acceptable to revisit this proposal. So I am in support of the amendment, and I hope everyone is too.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi?
I'm in support of the amendment that's been moved by Councillor Raftus and seconded by Councillor Vincenzo, but I'm not in support of not progressing the redevelopment at all. So if it goes ahead that the redevelopment, it states that it's not reprogressed, then I will support this amendment. Can we vote on them separately?
Yeah, what I'll do, officers, and I know we're doing this on the floor, but if we can make them parts one and part two, that would be handy. Thank you. Yep, fair point. Further questions?
That's if this passes. Sorry.
Councillor Pizzi.
That was all. Thank you.
Further comments? Very quickly from me, thank you, Councillor Raftus. I think it's an excellent amendment, very supportive. And also, thanks for being happy to tic-tac back and forth with me on the framing, because I think if we went to a notional capital allocation, it just in a governance sense was a risk of it not being an amendment but changing the intent. So thank you, very good amendment, and I'm very supportive. Further comments? Councillor Raftus, do you wish to close on the amendment?
Just a probably short comment there. I'm hopeful that one of the other key projects that was listed as utilising key resources at the moment, being the surf club, will hopefully be far progressed when we are looking at this again, so that we'll have plenty of resources on foot. So I hope you would support this. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put the amendment and ask you to cast your votes. It's clear the voting closed and the amendment is carried. We proceed. So if the amendment is carried, and now that forms part two. Further comments on the motion as amended, Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. It's just a question on page 139. It says here that therefore consideration for a redevelopment of the site would more likely be driven by identified service needs and demographic changes rather than functionality and structural asset requirements. My question is, what is the end of the useful life of the asset as it currently sits? End of the useful life of the asset?
Might be a Director Klassen one or Director Humphrey. Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, I take the question on notice to provide the end of life of all the assets on the site. The original building, you would imagine, it's getting close to the 40-year mark, it will be reaching end of its useful life very soon. Some of the upgrades will have extended that useful life, but it is likely that the building will need major renovation in the next 5 to 10 years.
Councillor?
And just a follow-on for the first half of that sentence, it said that redevelopment of the site will more likely to be driven by identified service needs and demographic changes. Could I just have an elaboration on that point?
Director?
Through Mr. Mayor, the city, like every local government in the Perth metropolitan area, has an ageing population. It is likely that we'll see more people looking to access these types of services, and it may well be the city has to consider new sites, new facilities in the next 5 to 10 years for these types of clubs and services. If we were to look at additional sites elsewhere, that might have an impact on what we're able to provide at this site, or the city might need to look at alternative sites close by that such a facility could be located on. So there are a lot of variables in that. This site has been a very good site for the lifetime of this building, but there are other areas where we might be able to put a larger building or a different style of building to meet future needs.
Councillor?
And just briefly, the adjacent Whitford's Library, if there is a redevelopment of this, what sort of impact would that be if it is on the same size?
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I would imagine it would have a profound impact. The buildings are essentially linked, so any major redevelopment of this facility would have an impact on the Whitford's Library.
Further comments? Councillor?
And just a comment. Look, I support not proceeding with it in this financial year. I think, as the document suggests, if there aren't resources, it's not really possible anyway. So as far as then allocating more, having a budget amendment to allocate more, I wouldn't support that. So I think revisiting it in the next financial year, I think that's sensible at this stage. And given the assets have an end of useful life in about 5 years, so I think, yep, it's reasonable.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just quickly, if council agrees not to progress, does not agree not to progress, versus agreeing to progress, perhaps a different way. The proposal on 25-26, the end of service life. If this is revisited in the years of 25-26, is there going to be any sort of structural occurrences that the city could foresee that would mean that we wouldn't meet a deadline before it reached its end of life?
Director Humphrey.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, the short answer is no. The city is very careful with the maintenance of the buildings and we ensure that they are always fit for purpose. When we refer to end of useful life, that's more that the original structure of the building is at a point where it would need major renovation. We have recently refurbished the toilets in that facility. That's an example of the type of renovation that's usually required at the end of the useful life. So what we would expect to see in the next 5 to 10 years is, in order to keep the building in a usable state, it will need major refurbishment or upgrades. But as I said in answer to a previous question, it's also likely there'll be increased pressure on this facility to provide services, and the number of people wishing to access it will grow, which might mean the site's too constrained. They're all things that we are constantly monitoring. And that's when we look at our long-term strategic financial plans and such plans, they're the kind of considerations we take into account.
Further comments? Deputy Mayor, do you wish to close?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just briefly, so the amended motion before us, I think, is going to be voted on two parts. So thank you for everybody's comments. I think we have a good solution here, and I'd encourage elected members to support the two parts of this motion before us. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put part one and ask you to cast your votes. It's clear the voting closed and part one is carried. And I'll also put part two and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and part two is carried. Thank you. Councillors, before progressing to motions of which previous notice has been given, I'm proposing or be seeking a mover for an exception resolution that, pursuant to clause 4.83 of the Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013, adoption by exception resolution, that council adopts the following items, being 12.1, 12.2, thank you, team. 12.3, 12.4, 12.6, 12.8, 12.12, 12.13, 12.14, 12.15. Thank you. Moved, Councillor Jones. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Deputy Mayor.
Council, I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and those items carried. Thank you all. We proceed to motions of which previous notice has been given. Notice of motion number one, Councillor Hutton.
I'm actually going to remove myself from the room due to a conflict of interest, but the Deputy Mayor is happy to propose the motion.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor? Oh, yeah. You're correct. Thank you. Mr. Deputy Mayor, oh yep, can someone, if I can ask if that door could be closed, thank you. I'll just, for the benefit of the room, Councillor Hutton has declared an indirect financial interest on this matter as his family owns and operates a business in the Joondalup CBD. So I'll go now to the Deputy Mayor. Are you happy to move?
Yeah, in support of my fellow ward councillor, on this notice of motion, I'm happy to move it in his absence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm happy to second. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So this motion relates to one initiative regarding parking charges in Joondalup CBD, and as we're all aware, there's been a lot of discussion about a lot of ideas and initiatives for increasing the activation of the CBD, and to my mind, this is just another initiative. I've probably come up with 10 or 20 myself and advise the administration of that. But what we're looking at here is a recommendation on making some free parking for certain times of day. And whilst I don't believe we should be prescriptive to the administration on necessarily trying to tie down these particular times before us, my view of this motion is to add it to the list of things that the administration is considering for activation of the CBD and our new parking system, for example, to come up with a recommendation for whether such an initiative can be considered, and if so, what appropriate times would be. So with that in mind, I'm just urging elected members to support this notice of motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just take the opportunity, seconder, to speak to it very quickly, just to say support of the motion. I think there's two elements of this, and I've given it some thought, I should say, since it was first raised a few weeks ago. Number one, I think this approach to looking at paid parking and flexibility in our regime is a good approach. So as Council Fishwick and others, and Councillor Chester and others know, we've relaxed parking rules previously around non-peak demands. I actually think for Joondalup CBD that's a much more nuanced, sensible approach to suit our CBD than what others have done, which is sort of go the 1 hour free parking. I mean, the prime example of the risk of 1 hour free parking is we have a lot of students who would be attending 45 minute tutorials and would love to get free parking, and you might find they fill up a lot of it. So I think this, as a nuanced approach that suits the Joondalup CBD's particular needs, is a good concept. I also want to concur with the comments of the Deputy Mayor that, Mr. CEO, if this passes, I think in terms of a report coming back and the timing of it, it would be a good thing. It would be a good thing to time well with the changes in parking, acknowledging that I wasn't here for that meeting, but when that is, you know, insofar as we can time these things together, I think that would be well received by the community. Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm happy to support the report. I don't have a problem with increasing the amount of free parking, but I know this has been raised over a number of years, primarily around the 1 hour free parking under previous councils. It's not the silver bullet that's going to fix all the problems in the CBD. I recently got a new car and I used the opportunity to drive through Joondalup CBD on Saturday night, and I do occasionally because just to see what's going on, and the city's very clean and well maintained, but it does look like a bit of a Hollywood movie set because you've got one or two restaurants on the outskirts of a shopping centre, you've got the nightclub and you've got Varsity, and then you got one thing on Davidson Terrace, they're all spread apart, and you've got a kebab shop, I think, as well, next to Art House Apartments. Most of the venues in the Joondalup CBD, or most of the businesses, are accounting practices and things like that, health services, which are all very important, but you don't have kind of districts separating the types of services sort of operating out of the CBD, so you're not really going to, it's not really going to get people into the CBD after business hours just by having free parking. But as I said, I'm happy to support the report, and I don't have any issue with free parking. I just don't think it's a silver bullet. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor May. Councillor Chesser.
Yes, thank you. Look, we know that the City of Perth uses, unashamedly, parking fees as a revenue raiser, when in fact it should be a mechanism for allocation of limited parking bays. So I guess the question I want to ask is, do we, to any degree, use parking fees as a revenue raiser, or do we use it in the totally appropriate way of allocating limited resources? Dr. Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The reason for managing parking, there are a few different reasons. One, as you mentioned, is to make sure that we, as much as we can, provide equitable and available access to parking, which is a limited resource, as you point out. Parking or charging for parking is implemented to not only cover the cost of the service, but also to ensure that we future-proof the service. So, for example, council last month accepted a tender for a new set of parking machines and infrastructure for our CBD. Our parking reserve will pay for that, and the money we receive for paid parking goes into that reserve.
Councillor Ventrilo.
Thank you. I just wanted to share a bit of my experience as a lecturer at North Metro TAFE in Leederville, and just to give a bit of an insight. The reason why I'm getting behind this is from a student perspective. I think we talk about activating the city, and I think students make up a really important element moving forward to do so. But one thing about students is they're always looking to, you know, cut costs or save. So I'll give you an experience that I can share with you all very quickly. Most of my students will park at the Loftus Centre because it's got 3 hours of free parking. And then they'll normally interrupt me in mid-class and ask if they can go and change their ticket over. But they've activated the space because they spend a lot of time after studies or before studies in the city of Leederville. So I guess from an activation point of view, I see the benefits of providing some parking benefits, especially when it comes to the youth and students. And we've got a robust student body here, but I don't see them activating the space. So this could be a step into that direction. Thanks.
Thank you for the comments. Councillor Pizzi.
I am supportive of this motion, but I take your comment, Mayor, that 1 hour parking free could possibly deactivate the space if all the parking spaces are taken. But I would like the report to include a comment on either 1 hour free parking or 30 minute free parking. I have a story from the community where they've done a run with a group through the city. It's got to the point where they've finished their run, they want to have a coffee, but they're not going to stay in the city of Joondalup because they don't want to pay for parking as well as their coffee, so they go elsewhere. So I just think either 1 hour or 30 minute free parking does activate the city centre and encourage people to stay and get a coffee, maybe browse some shops, you know, have people around. I think it does help, so I'd like that included in the report.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Jones.
Last time this came to council, I remember we asked for some information about the income that was generated from the parking, and I do remember being astounded at how big the income was to the City of Joondalup. So obviously that's going to affect the ratepayers with their rates. But at the same time, the night we had the special meeting a few weeks back, Perth City Council voted for free parking there. So maybe we need to follow their lead.
Councillor Kingston.
Yes, thank you. Look, I'm supporting this one. I think Councillor Pilifka is no longer a councillor with us. He was a long advocate for free parking in the city of some form, whether it was 1 hour, totally free, half an hour, different parking arrangements. And, you know, unfortunately, not always his advocacy was successful, but maybe tonight we'll be able to see, look at a different sort of model, and maybe that might be able to help alleviate some of the economic issues that's caused by the lack of activation. But I think Councillor May is right. I don't know to what degree some of this will be a silver bullet. I personally don't see the education providers and the students being too much of an issue. I think the city centre is quite a distance from ECU for students to walk, and students can walk quite a distance. But look, I'm generally supportive of this, and I hope it can work towards some sort of activation. But one thing that does need to be kept in mind is I think some of the services that are in the city, such as medical services and accountants and so on, I think last time there was a free parking trial, I believe, there was a bit of chaos that was caused because the parking outside of their offices was taken up by visitors to the city or people using that parking for all sorts of reasons, and they felt that their businesses suffered because it was taken up by those other people that weren't using their services. So there are trade-offs and problems that can occur out of this. So even half an hour free parking can have downsides. But I think looking at it all together, I think I'm willing to give it another attempt. So I hope everyone can support it.
Thank you. Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, I'd just like to make a comment that was made by Councillor Chester, and having, in a previous occupation, managed the City of Perth Parking Department for 10 years, I'd just like to say that it wasn't ever a revenue-raising exercise. The motto that we had in those days was, your car is welcome as you are, and that was in competition with the regional shopping centres where parking was free. So our mandate was to encourage people into the city, so we always looked carefully at the parking fees in those days, and I think they still do, because you're in competition where free parking is provided in regional shopping centres. I'm supporting this initiative to encourage patrons to the CBD because, like the Joondalup CBD, it is in competition with other shopping centres such as Whitford's, Carinup, and to a lesser degree, Warwick. So I'm supporting that we have some initiative to activate the CBD. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton-Park.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Similar to comments before, I also will be supporting this, but I do caution and don't believe that it's a silver bullet to solutions. I think if you look at places like Lakeside, who don't charge for parking, if people truly want to park for free, there's a way and a mean. And I think, you know, and taking on the comments from Councillor Kingston, especially around many medical facilities and suites who do rely on their patients having access to nearest possible parking, I think that's a big implication. And if I was a specialist looking to move to Joondalup to be part of our fantastic brimming health and medical precinct, that would be a bad thing in my book, and it would probably make me look elsewhere. I think what we can do is obviously help that traffic move along in terms of parking. And, yeah, so I think from a health perspective, medical suite perspective, that is a downside. Because, you know, there is few and far between parking near those, I guess, pinch points where they are mainly located, and it's a very sought-after parking place for that factor. In terms of our shopping centre car park, I believe the model going forward, if you look at Westfield Cannington, they do charge. And I think that is eventually going to be the model for most big regional shopping centres. If you look at Carinup, there are boom gates there that are currently not being used, potentially in the future could be used, I don't know, but I think we have to be matter of fact of it may be a reality that that happens eventually here too. But my most biggest concern is keeping that parking traffic flowing, and I think to go too far one way would only put us in detriment to be accessible to the industries that actually come to the city of Joondalup that look at us as an attractive place, and I think medical and health practitioners would think twice.
Thank you. Further comments? Mr. Deputy Mayor, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I'd like to start with a question, if I may.
just based on what's been discussed here, just in general for notices of motion, when I do a notice of motion, I always like to know what potential cost impact would be. So I would like to ask the relevant director, based on the notice of motion before us, do you have, at this point in time, an indicative amount that this might cost the city budget? Thank you.
Director?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I can't put a dollar figure on it, but I would not expect it to be significant. In the officer's comment, we note that we are looking to undertake a review of current parking arrangements at the moment, including fees, whilst this particular scenario hadn't been identified. We can add it into the mix, so I wouldn't see adding an additional scenario in would have a significantly different cost to what we were already investing in.
Deputy Mayor?
Okay, thank you. And a closing comment, noting the comments about the CBD being very quiet of an evening. Our role as councillors is not to be negative or shrug our shoulders about this. Our role is to use our knowledge and initiative to fix the problems before us. So I'd encourage all councillors to assist in the process of seeking solutions to improve the activation of the CBD at all times of day. And this is just another example. So I encourage you to support this notice of motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'll put that motion, Council, and ask you to cast your votes. Declare voting closed, and the motion is carried. Councillor Fishwick, yes, please. Thanks. Just a quick heads up to the governance team while Councillor Fishwick finds Councillor Hutton. The procedural motion to close meeting to the members of the public, I'll need another point three, which is permitting all the officers to remain. You're prepared? Great. Just thank you. Good work. Thank you. Councillor Hutton, notice of motion number two.
Yeah, I would like to move the motion.
Thank you. Move, second, Councillor May. Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, so I'm moving the motion that Council requests the City advocate to the State Government for stricter enforcement of e-rideable rules. Now, earlier this month, a 13-year-old girl tragically lost her life while riding an e-scooter in Wanneroo. Although there have been no recent fatalities in the city of Joondalup, we hear regular reports of close calls with both cars on our roads and with pedestrians on our pathways. It was about the same time last year that a 15-year-old was left in a critical condition after a crash on a crosswalk in Kingsley. A year earlier, another 13-year-old passed away at Joondalup Health Campus, with his 14-year-old friend left in a critical condition after a collision in Butler. With new, stricter, e-rideable rules introduced early last year by the state government, frustration in our community now centres around the lack of enforcement. For context, current e-rideable rules state one person per device, helmets required, riders must be 16 or over, bells or verbal warnings required, lights and reflectors required, 10 km speed limit on pathways, 25 km speed limit on bike paths, shared paths and local roads, and no travel on roads 50 km per hour or over. Yet, we all see these rules being broken on a daily basis. For example, on the way to tonight's council meeting, I spotted 6 girls riding on 4 e-scooters in total, on a pathway far exceeding 10 km per hour, wearing exactly 0 helmets, all appearing to be under the age of 16. This is, of course, a daily occurrence. As a local councillor, I receive regular complaints from members of my community who are frustrated at the perceived lack of action on issues like this. Personally, I believe our police need to be given the adequate powers and resources required to tackle this issue head on. Although not directly within the power of local government, we as a council have an important role to play in advocating for solutions that are in the best interest of our local community. Tonight we have a choice between taking a decisive stance on this issue or instead risking being seen as simply passing the buck. The next time a member of our community asks us what the city is doing to tackle this issue, We can inform them that although this is a state government issue, we are still taking it seriously and doing everything within our power to advocate for a solution that will have an impact. For the freedom fighters in the room who hate the idea of more government oversight in our lives, I would point you to one of the most influential thinkers in the history of classical liberalism, John Stuart Mill. In his famous essay on liberty, John Stuart Mill introduced us to the harm principle, which states, people should be free to act however they wish, unless their actions cause harm to somebody else. This is a principle I think most of us would agree on. Now let's apply this to the many instances where elderly members of our community have been run off their feet by e-scooters riding, speeding on our pathways, or where a road user has been involved in a traumatic collision as a result of an e-scooter pulling out in front of them on a road. When it comes to the use of e-ridables by children, John Stuart Mill believes the harm principle only applies to people who are able to exercise their freedom responsibly. For instance, paternalism over children was acceptable since children are not fully capable of responsibly exercising freedom. The same applies to the enforcement of e-ridable rules. Now let's talk about peer pressure. I had a young mother reach out to me today. She tells me that her 11-year-old son is the only member of his friend group who doesn't own an e-scooter. She knows the danger, and much to her son's dismay, she refuses to allow him to ride one. Unfortunately for her, when her son is out of sight, there's not much more she can do. She constantly fears the worst. She said to me today, my concern is if my son jumps on the back of one with a friend. I can educate him till I'm blue in the face, but peer pressure makes us do stupid things. Stricter enforcement of e-ridable rules would give her the peace of mind she desires. Now, before I conclude, I would like to note that this motion is aimed at privately owned e-ridables. For those not familiar, the for-hire or shareable e-ridables, which will be getting discussed at next month's council meeting, which I tend to support, are pre-programmed to follow the rules of the day, using geofencing, GPS tracking, and the need to remove the helmet before you progress. I encourage you all to support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you to Councillor Hutton for putting this motion forward. A few points. First of all, we do all witness people doing silly things on e-scooters, just like we see people doing silly things on motorbikes and cars. I saw a guy doing a wheelie on his motorbike a couple of days ago down Marmion Ave. I won't say what I thought of a wheelie, but it was obviously a stupid thing to do, very dangerous. But kids on the side of the road think it looks really cool. So that sets a bad example. But in terms of e-scooters, I've never liked them. Doesn't mean I don't think other people should be able to own them and use them. Personally, I just won't get one. I've seen someone walking their dog riding an e-scooter, and I think this is probably the only time that the day this guy's going to get any exercise and he's standing on an e-scooter. I don't think kids are using them instead of riding their bikes or running or skateboarding and doing physical exercise, which is so important to people of all ages. Another example is I often do my runs along the coast, along West Coast Drive. I did a long run from Hillary's Marina to Scarborough, where the amphitheatre is, and back. As soon as you cross the boundary into the city of Stirling, it's just a mess. You see these orange e-scooters dumped everywhere. I don't know if that's not part of this motion, but it just goes to say that local government does play a role in this space. Clearly, the city of Stirling has decided that they're happy for their shared pubs to be full of e-scooters dumped, and e-scooters dumped on the roofs of schools and everywhere else. We haven't gone down that path in the city of Joondalup today. So e-scooters are primarily using city of Joondalup assets, particularly the shared paths, footpaths, etc. You can't hear them coming up behind you. And for those of us who want to use a path to walk or run or just get some fresh air, you often are kind of ducking for cover by a minority of users who cause a lot of hassle. In terms of state government enforcement, I understand the police are stretched, we're under-resourced, underfunded, where people are being fast-tracked to permanent residency from countries like the UK to work as police officers. And I hope that issue is resolved, and I think it probably will be resolved as the economic cycle fluctuates. But I just think it's important for local governments to make the point that
we do expect better enforcement of this, because we have very limited powers to enforce those rules, if any powers at all. So I commend the motion and encourage other elected members to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Chester?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to commend Councillor Hutton for the notice of motion. I'm sure it's well intended, but I think it's like spitting into the wind, to use a phrase. Other cities around the world have banned e-scooters entirely because they had the foresight to see the problems that would ensue if we allowed them. At the moment, the police are understaffed, and to my knowledge, I've never seen a cyclist not wearing a helmet and being picked up and spoken to by the police. We know they're a menace. I've had two scooter riders, e-scooter riders, at night with no lights coming towards me as I was travelling forward. They were coming at me. I just couldn't believe it. Unfortunately, I'm very pessimistic about the effectiveness of this. I don't argue against advocating, but to be quite honest, if we expect the police to improve their enforcement, I think we are wasting our time. So best of luck, Councillor.
Thank you. I think I had Councillor Kingston and Councillor Pizzi.
Oh, right. Yes, look, similar comments to Councillor Chester on this one. I'm never quite sure what these sort of motions do in practice, is that I will be supporting this and I agree with this. While I was driving here, of course, it was sort of starting to get later, I had somebody who was probably about 16, wearing grey, and he was on an e-scooter. He didn't have any lights on, and he was going up the right-hand side of the road. He wasn't even driving on the left. He was all over the place. He was even taking a selfie while he was doing it. So maybe he was capturing the sunset, which was, you know, but it wasn't helpful. But with these sort of motions, I'm not quite sure where this goes, because as Councillor Chester and May has suggested, is that the police are stretched. There have been a number of conversations, which I know that councillors have had with the police, I forget the man's name, but the police officer who is responsible for the North here. Councillor Thompson was quite onto this when she was on the council, had quite a conversation with him at an event which was held by the city, that you know, there is only limited resources in taking the police off one activity towards taking the police off one activity, where they're trying to enforce the law in one area to another area. So, I mean, it's important to advocate from this, but this is difficult to enforce the speed limits. Are they going to have to start pulling out radar guns on youth in different areas? How is this going to be done? But I guess these are all problems for the state government to resolve, not necessarily the local. So, look, I'm for advocating on it, but there are limitations on what we can do and even what the state can do on this. I think the core of this is, the core of the problem in my mind is not so much enforcement's one part, which is difficult because these breaches of the rules occur anywhere, but I think the difficulty is actually the decision to, as Councillor Chester has alluded to license these, allow these vehicles fairly free range. I think that's been the core of this issue. I will touch on the freedom point that Councillor Hutton spoke about, which was about the harm principle. I think, personally, I wouldn't have used it in this context. I think the harm principle is linked to act utilitarianism. So you're actually calculating the overall benefit and overall loss. So that doesn't actually mean necessarily that, doesn't necessarily follow that a stricter enforcement of rules should always occur on the basis of the harm principle applying that John Stuart Mill's act utilitarianism as a whole. So I think I wouldn't argue that. I think more from a perspective, I think that at this time, I think everyone sees the breaches, everyone sees the problems. The state is well aware of it. I've spoken to state members about this. I think a lot of the advocacies occurred, formalising a position, said, what does this do in practice? You know, everyone is aware of the issue. The state members are aware of the issue. The ministers are aware of the issue. The police are aware. I think it's important we do it, but where it goes is harder to see from this. So, I think there needs to be a fundamental change of the rules, not necessarily stricter enforcement. So I'll leave it there, and I hope everyone can support this.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi, then Councillor Finchullo.
When I was door knocking to become a councillor, many, many community members, especially through Belden, had concerns about e-scooters and the safety of the children and the residents that are around them when they're speeding through the streets, not necessarily just e-scooters but scooters in general. I'm also a mother of teenagers, and I think it is really up to families and the community to raise children in a way that they respect and think about their safety before they do things. But secondly, my son's also involved in footy, and we have a lot of issues at the footy fields where people are speeding through their e-scooters. So I understand the issue. It's a terrible loss what has occurred in our community just recently. But my question is, what do you actually wish to advocate for with enforcement? What are you going to ask the police to do more of, or the state to do more of? So that's my question back to Councillor Hutton. I will support the motion because I think it is important that we as a community start advocating, but I think it also comes down to family values and community values to pull these kids up when they're doing the wrong thing.
Thank you. Councillor Ventura.
Yeah, I just want to touch on a few points that have already been made by Councillor Kingston. I don't disagree with him in the sense of the overreach side of things. That is a really big concern for me on a state level. There's a sense of overreach. At some point, we've got to respect the process of local and state government and back them in some degree. But my concern is about advocacy, and you know, I would like to think that when it comes to advocacy, you've only got a certain amount of chips, and if you keep using all your chips up, then when the big issues come, they get kind of like it becomes a harder proposition. So I would caution us to put some value on when we use advocacy. And I'm not saying this is not deserving of it. I'm just saying this is a factor. We need to think about it from that perspective. So that's where I'm a little bit torn on the I appreciate and I agree and I echo the sentiments of everyone, but do I want to use an advocacy chip right now? The other thing too is the forces and the reallocation of what may take place. If we do achieve an outcome, we put a lot of pressure and we get an outcome, which is great. What does that mean as a trickle-down effect to what's happening? Like, we're trying to emphasise the need to address hooning in some areas. We've got issues to do with other areas in crime and enforcement, and we're now going to specify time and energy into one micro part, which is e-scooters. I'm not saying it's not something we need to advocate for, but at the same time, I'm cautiously aware that there are some much bigger ticket items that we should be addressing as a local government than this. It is a state issue. It should remain a state issue, and that's why I'm slightly concerned. Cheers.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. E-scooters is something that's obviously going to come up a lot. Noting the comments made tonight, it's when the hire e-scooters comes to the city of Joondalup, I hope everyone remembers this conversation and how it went. But in relation to the private use of e-scooters, yes, they're dangerous. Yes, people get hurt. It's not something that's, you know, going to go away. Not until, obviously, state government does something about it. But that's the point of it, is that it's a state responsibility. I agree with Councillor Ventura in that it is a bit of an overreach. I understand why this is here. I understand the city advocating for it, but again, on the same token, I hear your words in relation to is it our responsibility? We can make our voices known, we can have our statements read out, but at the end of the day, I don't believe that this is something that's worth supporting, because I just don't think that it has any value.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I take great offence at the assertion from Councillor Hutton that if you don't vote for this, you're somehow abdicating ourselves of responsibility and care of our community. I guarantee nobody is more concerned than me regarding road safety. And I think it's quite ironic that a month ago we were requesting vehicles to speed up on Marmion Avenue. At least I wasn't, but I think that flies in the face of what's being talked about here. So, advocacy. Every one of us is free to advocate to anyone we like, with or without a notice of motion. I'd encourage people to advocate to our community, advocate...
What about that?
Councillor Hutton?
Sorry, it's a little bit delayed. I believe the Deputy Mayor was adversely reflecting on a previous decision of Council.
I think that's a fair point of order, Councillor Hutton. I think, Mr Deputy Mayor, the reference to the Marmion decision, I suggest that you withdraw and apologise for that comment.
Happy to withdraw and apologise, and I'll move on. Thank you. So, advocacy... we should all be advocating to our community, to our state and federal MPs. After all, I mean, I personally believe that at a federal level, we should have standardised rules across the country and not just piecemeal by state government and piecemeal by local government trying to advocate. The biggest people that we can advocate to, in my opinion, is actually schools. A lot of the e-scooter use I see by under-16s is to and from school, and I don't see any reason why schools can't even get involved in monitoring who's turning up on a scooter who's underage. It should be very easy to do, and that would, to my mind, make things a whole lot better, because surely the schools would be interested in making sure that their students are in compliance with the laws of the state. Also, we can advocate through WALGA. Surely it would be more productive for WALGA as a whole to advocate for stricter, you know, or better enforcement or better resources of the police. In fact, I've spoken about this myself about the problem is that we've got laws, but the police don't have the resources to actually police and enforce them. I've spoken about that. I didn't need to do a notice of motion to do it. Also, there was comments made about a notice of motion formally from Councillor Hamilton Prime that's going to come back to Council very soon. And I'd urge elected members to actually familiarise themselves with that notice of motion. It is not purely about rental e-scooters. The notice of motion, number 4, Councillor Hamilton Prime, micro-mobility and e-rideable usage within the city of Joondalup. Council decision involved carrying 4 separate motions. The first was about implementation of a trial for e-scooters. Motion 3, 4 and 5, applicable to e-scooter usage in general, so my absolute preference for this council would be to not pursue this notice of motion at this point in time, but when this Councillor Hunter Prime's motion comes before us, we can raise all kinds, we can have all these discussions, we can consider making amendments or alternative recommendations. I think it's disingenuous to Councillor Hamilton Prime to kind of jump the gun with this notice of motion dealing with this one issue only of advocacy. So I guarantee you I am not against advocacy. I'm not supportive of apathy. I'm 100% on board for road safety of our community, and I don't believe it's best served by this notice of motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Raffis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I won't be supporting this motion. A few queries on this. I think in terms of, I think we're all aware that our police force in the state is somewhat under-resourced, and they've got a whole range of responsibilities to deliver upon. I probably see more complaints around vehicle break-ins, hooning, speeding, than issues of e-scooters, in terms of needing enforcement. Not to say that there's not an issue in terms of the education of the users on road rules, but in terms of enforcement, also I'm not sure about the reference to focusing on privately owned e-scooters. Half the issue I see with those using the ones on the coast, whilst the scooter may require you to unplug the helmet, it doesn't require you to put it on your head. It just means you hang it on the handlebar. So I would not see, like to think that it would then be just directing the police to actually focus on private and not corporate-owned scooters. So I just see an issue with the way it's all structured and what we're trying to deliver here. So on this particular one, I won't be supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think it's no secret I'm pretty passionate about e-writables, and I was pretty torn about this particular notice of motion. While I commend Councillor Hutton and his intention, I think there is more effective ways to engage with the state authorities in terms of actually having fundamental change. And I don't think it's a lack of, I guess, appetite from the stakeholder groups about who represent the e-writables, but I think it's similar to a lot of road safety issues in general, where you have a minority who's for a lot of things for the majority. And I think touching on particular, you know, it's obviously tragic what happened to that young girl. I think no one, it's horrific. And no one wants to see a young person die of someone who probably loved e-scooters and loved doing it, unfortunately, very unfortunate circumstances. I think, you know, if you take things in, you know, obviously sad circumstances like that, you know, cars will be banned as well if you think about fatalities of cars. I think you need to put things into perspective of how can we, you know, advocate for education. I think if you look at, in my generation, schools were heavily focused on education of being responsible cyclists, how to share the pathway, how to share the road, and those sort of things. So I think that, you know, I've advocated to my local state MP many a times about this particular issue, and I think Councillor Ventura actually makes a good point about the advocacy chips. And it's very important to be very strategic. This is a very worthy thing to advocate on, but do I believe that this is the appropriate way to do it? Respectfully, I do not at this point in time. I will not be supporting it, but I encourage Councillor Hutton to continue his passion of advocating for e-writable and better education of young people especially, but I think it's across the board of all e-writable users, but also road users as well. You know, it's not a day goes past where I don't see someone doing something illegally on the road and they're driving a car or, you know, cycling. I think we all need to, you know, take up lives a bit more preciously in how we act on the roads and footpaths. That being the case, I'm not going to support this.
Thank you. Councillor Fishwick and then Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, as we discussed earlier on this evening about notices of motion and the protocols, this doesn't fit in with our protocol. So that then is a negative for me because it's not calling for a report, it's going straight to advocate to the state government, which therefore is a block for me on the notice of motion. Whether it's a good one or a bad one, it's just a protocol, and I think we should adhere to that. Secondly, I've heard the comments made by Councillor Hill, and he's referred to Councillor Hamilton Prime's notice of motion, and she herself has, and that is coming back as a report. If all the issues can be considered there, so I think we've got a protocol. We need to stick to it. So I won't be supporting it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not a fan of e-scooters at all, but I won't be supporting this motion because this is a state issue, and I think we're wasting our time here.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Hutton, do you wish to close?
I do. And firstly, I thank everyone for their comments on this motion. I think it's clear to me that we all agree that more needs to be done on this issue, and it's a question of the way in which we go about it. There's a few issues to go through. I will start with the last comment around about protocol. I think, as has been stated, I have followed the protocol. I've consulted with the administration. We've landed on this wording. It was determined that it was a straight decision required. Do we advocate on or do we not advocate? The report would simply come back and say it was up to us. So that's all fine. Now, in terms of priority of issue, Councillor Raft has mentioned in his area, you know, car break-ins and speeding and hooning was a top topic. I do think this very much depends on the demographics of our area. The North Ward is an area with a high proportion of young families. I think as you move further north into the city of Wanneroo as well, that continues to be very much prevalent. Which is important. There was a reference made to previous decision of council where obviously we advocated for an increase in speed limit on a major road which was heavily supported by local community. I would just say the main point here is this is not about the rules itself. We can take positions on what the rules should be, what they shouldn't be, and that's fine. What this is actually about is where there are rules, they need to be enforced. Now, what would enforcement actually mean? Now, if you check the comments of my motion, I talk about adequate power and resources. Now, just to talk about the power, the feedback I get from police is that this isn't necessarily directly a resourcing issue, that is part of it, but part of it is actually the demotivation that our police officers feel. Now, the reason our police officers feel demotivated is that whenever they approach a minor who is committing an offence, police don't actually necessarily have the power to apprehend that individual. All they can do is ask that individual to move on, and if the individual moves on... Now, the feedback I've got from my consultation with members of the police force is effectively they see the same individuals committing offences under these rules day in, day out. The individuals sort of laugh in their face. They know if they move on, not much more can be done about it. Their parents don't find out about it. What I actually think police would love is if they could actually confiscate the e-scooter, give the kid a note and force the parent to come up to the police office and collect it, pay the fine, and we would make some progress. So for me, we actually have to remember about the demoralisation of our police force itself. It's obviously been mentioned about the understaffing of police. That is part of it as well. But I think that goes in hand with actually giving them the right powers to make a difference. Now, there was reference mentioned before about WAALGA advocacy. I completely agree WAALGA is the correct platform to advocate for this. Now, in terms of process and procedure, I know we're all sticklers for process and procedure, and WAALGA have actually informed me that before we take an advocacy motion through WAALGA, it's the WAALGA's preference that the motion first comes through the member councils. Now, obviously, City of Joondalup sits as one of the three North Metropolitan Councils. I would inform Council that this motion is also getting debated this evening at the City of Wanneroo. City of Wanneroo is seeking to pass a similar motion. From discussion through WAALGA with Councils at City of Stirling, City of Stirling is also...
Point of order, Mr. Mayor, this is new information. City of Wanneroo's decision...
Yeah, I note the point of order, Councillor Fishwick. The lead-in was obviously comments about how to progress through WAALGA, so I can also see how Councillor Hutton came to that point. But I think I'll say, please don't introduce any more new facts, Councillor Hutton, and just return to summation.
Yeah, I say I'm addressing the point, but the point being is that this has been worked through WAALGA. This is one of the first steps of pushing it through WAALGA. What I'm seeking to do here is actually build a consensus across three of the largest councils in the state of Western Australia, who make up about a third of the population, and two of which, the council City of Joondalup and City of Wanneroo, are the councils most adversely affected by this due to a large proportion of youth and young families. So that's why I'm going about it this way. Again, in terms of advocacy itself, I get those other priorities. As far as I'm concerned, this will be added to a list of advocacy positions the city will take. When the city meets with members of state government, we can provide this position. Again, we don't necessarily have to take the lead on this. WAALGA can hopefully take the lead on it, maybe one of the other member councillors. Obviously, as referenced in my motion, the recent fatalities that have happened in the city of Wanneroo, I do imagine because of that, the city of Wanneroo would be happy to take the lead. But it would be great if the city of Joondalup could back them up on that. Now, in terms of overreach, just going back to this question around about, the ability of the police actually to enforce the rules, given their frustration. Now, you can only imagine the frustration our rangers feel. I get comments...
Councillor Hutton, I think we're out of time.
Okay. I can conclude my comments. Lots of questions asked, but as I say, I appreciate everyone's comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hutton. I'll put that motion, Council, and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the motion is not carried. Councillors, we now move to the confidential items. So I'm proposing a procedural motion. It's on the screen before you. I will, for the benefit of everybody, not read through it line by line. However, it's essentially that in accordance with the appropriate sections that we close the meeting to the public to consider item 12.10 being the tender for bulk hard waste collection and processing, item 13.2.1 CEO performance review process, and item 13.2.2, also confidential, the salary review of the CEO, that we, for item 12.10, bulk hard waste, essentially allow our directors and governance officers to remain in the room with us, and a third part, which is for the two CEO items, essentially just allow Mr. Parry and Mrs. Kylie Bergman to remain in the room with us. So I'll put that motion, seconded Councillor Kingston. Thank you. By a show of hands, those in favour. Against, declare that carried unanimously. Thank you. Council, while that is being sorted, noting that the first item, being item 12.10, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll invite you to take the chair for that item, and I will return shortly. We're online. Thank you. In accordance with clause 5.26 and 7 of the City of Joondalup's Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013, the decision of council is to be read aloud by the presiding member. I therefore update on the following notices of motion. In regards to item 12.10, let's check that. Yes, in regards to item 12.10, the council has resolved that, one, it accepts the tender submitted by Cleanaway Proprietary Limited, Alternative 3, for the provision of bulk hard waste services and delivery services, separable portion one, as specified in tender 008-724 for the period of 5 years, with the option of a two further terms of 1 year each at the submitted schedule of rates, with any price variations subject to the percentage change in the Perth CPI or groups and transport index, subject to negotiation of final contract terms before entering into a contract. Two, accepts the tender submitted by Veolia Services, Environmental Services Australia Proprietary Limited, for the provision of bulk hard waste processing services, separable portion three, as specified in tender 008-24, for a period of 5 years, with the option of two further terms of 1 year each, at the submitted schedule of rates, with any price variations subject to the percentage change in the Perth CPI or groups and transport index, subject to negotiation of final contract terms before entering into a contract. Three, notes the additional resources required to support the enhanced waste service customer service as outlined in this report. Four, lists for consideration in the 24-25 employee cost budget an amount of $138,398 plus applicable superannuation, reflecting the estimated annual costs of additional staff resources required in the 2024-25 year to enhance the customer service and experience for these services. And five, notes that should revenue from waste services be insufficient to meet this additional expenditure, the shortfall will be met from funds held in the Waste Management Reserve. With regards to item 13.2.1, Council has resolved that it, one, notes the advice received from Civic Legal regarding whether Clause 11 of the CEO, Chief Executive Officer Employment Contract, is considered to meet best practice. Two, agrees that Clause 11 of the Chief Executive Officer Employment Contract be utilised as the process for performance development and review as required by Clause 16 of the City of Joondalup Standards for CEO Recruitment, Performance and Termination Policy. Three, notes the recommendations provided by Civic Legal contained within the report to improve provisions related to the Chief Executive Officer performance review process and gives further consideration to them when a new employment contract is developed. Four, endorses the development of a Chief Executive Officer performance review procedure process to supplement and provide administrative guidance to Clause 11 of the Chief Executive Officer employment contract. And with regards to item 13.2.2, confidential salary review CEO, the council has resolved that, one, it acknowledges that the Salaries and Allowances Tribunal has determined as of 6th of April 2023 that the local government band classifications have been increased by 3.5% effective from 1 July 2023, and two, adopts the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer's total reward package for the 2023 salary review to be an increase of 4%, being $396,351 plus the 0.5% increase to the statutory superannuation guarantee, effective from 1 July 2023. Sorry, 1 August. Thank you, Director Parry. Effective from 1 August 2023. Council, before I move a motion to resume order of business, I wish to advise this meeting that, one, a complaint was made to the Local Government Standards Panel in which it was alleged that I contravened Regulation 34D of the Local Government Administration Regulations 1996 when, during a committee meeting of the 9th of October 2023, I used an offensive and objectionable expression. Two, the panel have found that I breached Regulation 34D by my conduct. Three, I acknowledge that I should not have made the comment and I now apologise to my fellow councillors. Council, I propose a notice of motion that we resume the operation of Clause 4.3 of the City of Joondalup Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013, Order of Business, seconded Deputy Mayor. By a show of hands, those in favour, those against, thank you, carried unanimously. Item 17, announcement of notices of motion for the next meeting. Council, are there any? CEO drew to my attention, I missed item 14, reports of the Chief Executive Officer, of which there were none, and 15, urgent business, of which there were none. That brings us then to item 18, closure. That concludes tonight's meeting, and I hereby conclude it at 10:36 p.m. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.